Dead On with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation cussing and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy!
Step right up, you will not believe your ears. It's Morin Monday on the horn. No one will be admitted after the first 5 minutes. Head inside the tent and you will be up to your armpits in Morins. Oh, it is Morin Monday on the horn, and we have, we've got some Jim Dandy nominees for the evening. Yes, we do. I'm trying to find out that... Has Ferg been in here listening to metal or something? Now my headphones are all fuzzy. Yes. Or is that me? Is this what happens when you develop the Kwisatz Haderach command voice? I don't know. We'll find out, but it certainly is annoying. It's one of those things I didn't expect to be hearing. What in the... Where's the engineer? Does it get better if I turn it down? No, it still sounds fuzzy. No, I don't think it's me. No, it is Morin Monday on the horn, though. And would somebody shoot me a note in the chat room? Do I sound fuzzy coming to you? Sort of a... When I talk, I don't know. I got a weird return going on here. So just shoot me in. I'm watching the main chat room. Let me know. Yeah, okay. Sounds a little fuzzy. Thanks, Sparky. Better? No? All right. That's still weird. Stand by. Still weird? Yeah. Well, what in the world could this be? Whatever it is, it's certainly annoying the daylights out of me. How about that? How about that? No? All right. What in God's name is going on here? Hey, look, it's radio on the fly. That's strange. No, that's okay. Well, I don't know. We'll get through this as best we can. I don't know what the cause of this is. But anyway, it's Morin Monday. And we are... I hate this. Oh! This is... All right, I got to stop letting the boy listen. He comes back here and listens to video, watches videos. This has got to end. Dadgummit. I know, this is highly unprofessional, isn't it? Well, you know, if we had 32 people making the show go, this kind of... No, this is weird. Okay, maybe it is just in my headphones. But, yeah. Nasty. We'll get through. I am, after all, a professional. It's Morin Monday, and we've got a lot of Morin Monday. My God, this sounds... Yuck. Not trying to be a prima donna, but this is... You know. Hey, John, you listening? Oh, okay. Jim says he's got me 5x5. Maybe it's just in my cans then. Maybe I'll have to take the cans off, although I kind of hate to do that.
Anyway, it's more in Monday on the Horn. And we do have... Wow, my energy's just all screwed up. Bizarre. All right. Pull back. Take a breath. I will not be a diva. I will not be a diva. I will not be a diva. Okay, thanks, Lottie. It's you, Bob. You sound fine on the radio, which means that, yeah, somewhere along the way, Ferg has probably jacked up the headphones and blown the little speakers in them. Thanks, Ferg. Think positive. Thanks, Blue Ape. I didn't know that Norman Vincent Peale was hiding out in the chat room. Power of positive thinking, Bob. All right, well, somewhere along the way, I'll cue up some music or something, and I'll go and find another set of cans. This is just squirrely. But if it's going to be squirrely, I guess this is the day for it to be squirrely on. If there's any given day of the week where I should sound to me like the tinny speaker of a 1974 Ford Pinto, okay, William says the sound is sort of buzzy on the program, and it's not me. Where's this coming from? I don't know. It's PFL, everything. No. Weird. It was. I didn't have any of this a little bit ago when I was on a conference call. Go figure. Just what I need. Something broken. But if there's any day that this should happen, it should happen on Moran Monday. Because we got lots of Morans this evening. We have techno Morans, religious Morans, bigoted Morans, and I guess that kind of merges with religious Morans. Military Morans. Judicial, if you will, judicial Morans. We are not in any wise wanting for Morans this evening. Which Moran to start with? Well, since I sound to me, and perhaps to some of you, like the crappy speaker inside a Ford Pinto, it probably makes sense to start here. Another reason why I despise terrestrial radio, terrestrial broadcasting, and the Recording Industry Association of America, the RIAA. Now, a lot of you have cell phones. Some of you don't. Some of you refuse to participate, and I applaud your efforts in that regard. But given the technological nature of what we have here, yeah, we got a couple of smartphones. Because otherwise there have been many circumstances where we would never have broadcasted had we not had said smartphones. And they're very handy. And, you know, there's something kind of cool about firing it up and being able to hear the horn stream when I'm driving down the road so I can know if we go off the air or something. I can call back and say, hey, restart the stream. But you know who hates smartphones? The Recording Industry Association of America, and the Organization of Terrestrial Buggy Whip Broadcasting. You remember the over-the-air broadcasting, the folks who bring you, we'll be back with another Britney Spears hit right after this 30-minute string of commercials right here on Hot Hits 101. Yeah. You know, terrestrial radio where, for the life of you in the United States, you can't hear anything even remotely interesting. And if you, Connell Rand, you know, on the AM side, it's Mark Levin or Flush Flimball, or you get to listen to Michael the Savage Wiener spiraling out into his own private galaxy, or Beck. Terrestrial radio is a dead letter at this point, as far as I'm concerned. That's a part of why the horn is on the Internet. But Nate Anderson, writing at Ars Technica in the Law and Disorder column, says, music labels and radio broadcasters can't agree on much, including whether radio should be forced to turn over hundreds of millions of dollars a year to pay for the music it plays. Yeah, that's right. Radio still gets that break. But the two sides can't agree on this. Congress should mandate that FM radio receivers be built into cell phones, PDAs, and other portable electronics. Now, I've got one on my smartphone, and I deleted it. I don't need it. It's useless to me. What? I'm gonna dial up the 103.7 and listen to another chunk of bubble gum get stuck to the interior surfaces of my brain? No. But you know what? That's not good enough for the radio industry and the recording. No. No, they want to compel. They want a law. Get it? They want a law, these morons. These greedy, nasty little morons. They want Congress facing things like continuing to mount foreclosure crisis, the hemorrhaging of our national treasure into the bloody sands and mountain passes and snows of Afghanistan, a nation that still has a health care crisis on its hands, a nation that cannot even get minimal laws passed through its legislative body, the Congress. Never mind all that. Never mind. Because, well, the RIAA and the radio industry want Congress to drop everything. They are pushing a law to force manufacturers to build FM radios into portable electronics. Bless their hearts, the Consumer Electronics Association, another lobbying group, this one I can side with, is absolutely on fire. They are what's the technical term? Righteously pissed off. The backroom scheme of the National Association of Broadcasters and RIAA to have Congress mandate broadcast radios in portable devices, including mobile phones, is the height of absurdity. Those were the words of Consumer Electronics Association President Gary Shapiro. And then here's the man. This guy and I, we're thinking on the same wavelength. He went on and said, rather than adapt to the digital marketplace, NAB and RIAA act like buggy whip industries that refuse to innovate and seek to impose penalties on those that do. Meanwhile, the National Association of Broadcasters, you know, the buggy whip manufacturers, and the RIAA, those other buggy whip manufacturers, they say that they're just trying to provide more consumer choice. Really? That's choice? The last I checked, I can scan up, and this is West Virginia, but we got lots of radio stations, and I can scan up and down them. Let's see, down on the lower end of the dial, I got lots of Jeebus music and a couple of stations from West Virginia Public Radio broadcasting classical music for your funeral. And then I go on up the dial, and I've got hot hits from 1962 and two different country stations playing the same focus group tested pablum. Done with single coil pickup, Stratocasters and the like. Songs about putting boots in intimate orifices of various and sundry people. hey, it's the latest from Toby Keith. You know, that song where he makes fun of the fact that the planet is baking right now, cooking. What is it? That's How We Roll or America. That's, I forget. The Jib Jab guys did his stupid little video for it. And then there's a couple of channels of today's hot hits right after more of these commercials. And then there's the ubiquitous classic rock station where I can almost hear the entirety of the song inside my brain before the first two notes have been played. That's choice? No. That's the exact opposite of choice. That's the National Association of Broadcasters being pissed off that they're not getting away with their little ruse anymore. That their little con game ain't working no more. That people do have choice, and they're not using those choices to listen to crap now that they have been freed. They have heard the future, and it ain't playing on no terrestrial radio stations. See, the RIAA needs terrestrial radio to survive, so the RIAA can sue them to get all those hundreds of billions of dollars that radio still doesn't have to pay, but Internet radio does. And the National Association of Broadcasters is simply hanging on for dear life. Morons. So it becomes a question of who's going to win. So Nate Anderson writes, the framework concerns public performance rights. Radio broadcasters and music labels are at each other's throats over the question of whether radio ought to pay performance rights to labels or artists when it plays their music on the air. Currently, only songwriters get paid, not artists or labels. A bill percolating in Congress, the Performance Rights Act, would rationalize performance rights in the U.S. Satellite radio and webcasters currently pay full performance fees to labels or artists, but radio does not, thanks to a long-standing exemption in copyright law. So they're going to try to strike a deal that way. The two sides hope to strike a grand bargain. Radio would agree to pay about $100 million a year, less than it feared, but in return it would get access to a larger market through mandated FM radio chips in portable devices. As regards the chip, this is a key issue for the radio industry. Music First, too, likes FM chips in all cell phones, PDAs, and so forth. It gives consumers access to more music choices. Oh, there's a lot of this coming down the pike. You know, it's not just Google and Verizon out there setting up their separate pieces. These guys want Congress. And, you know, they're... Wow. I feel a little creeped out about this because... I really don't, you know, this is like baseball on steroids. I really don't think this is anything that Congress needs to embroil itself in. And why aren't they over at the FCC anyway? But News Ninja Gene sent this story on to me last week, and I've kind of been hanging on to it for a bit. And I just didn't. I look at the story and I see, no, forcing you to have an, no. That's anti-competitive. You know what? If radio wants its listeners that it's lost to iPods and MP3 players and PDAs and smartphones back, you know what? This is one of those moments when I say, let them compete. But here's the rub. They can't. They're locked into a commercial model where they have to play the Eagles, Billy Joel, and, you know, some other god-awful chestnut, and then play you 4 or 5 minutes of commercials, all for crap that you didn't want in the first place, and then come back and oh, I don't know, play you Good Morning Starshine. Shabba dabba doobie, labba labba noobie, hi la lo lo, Good Morning Starshine. No, I didn't like it when it came out, and I was only a kid. So, watch out. Every little, and see, this all goes to freedom. I should have the freedom, I think, not to have to even be bothered by a medium that I have no interest in whatsoever. You know what? I'll bet you the people who press vinyl would like to have every smartphone come with a record player on it. Is there anybody out there still doing reel-to-reels? Maybe we need a reel-to-reel strapped on, you know, one of those nice old Akai units. What else? Maybe it should be a crank-handled Victrola. Yeah. And maybe a kazoo and a harmonica. But you see, those are things of the past. They're not part of the future. Lottie in the chat room says, hey, wait a minute, Bob. My prostate likes the attention AM radio gives it. Men, how's your prostate feeling? Ugh. And those Swedish meat bowling balls are awesome. No, the mattresses are Swedish. The bowling balls are only picked up by the vacuum cleaners, Lottie. It does. It all runs together after a while. So, yeah, there's our first Moran nominee of the evening. There's so much, and, you know, I'm a techno geek. And there's so much magnificent technology out there. And I've got, and we've got the Recording Industry Association of America and the National Association of Broadcasters trying to drag me back into the cave when I've stepped out and I've seen great shining airships gliding through the air and heading off toward that George Jetson apartment building over there, but the RIAA and the NAB want me back in the cave. Listening to their commercials for Trojan Man or God only knows what. No, thank you. And frankly, the attitude that I manifest about this, the Limbaughs and the Becks and all those people on AM, here's a hint. Nobody 20 or 30 years old is listening to them. We actually do have 20-something. We've got teenagers listening to this program. We've got 20-somethings and 30-somethings. And we've got them all the way up, octogenarians and nonagenarians, listening to this program. Once you get past the fundamental issues of figuring out how to get the Internet to do what the Internet does, there's a certain leveling that takes place. And there's something out there for everyone on the Internet. And a lot of people pouring heart and soul into structures that no longer have to be supported by bloaty, nasty, ugly little radio station general managers and, you know, the Herb Tarlicks of the world getting their cut, wetting their beak. So I'm going to be paying attention to this story to see what comes of it. Because if this thing starts getting any legs, as it were, I'm going to raise hell. I'll write my letters. I'll make my phone calls. Make sure my voice is heard. Y'all will probably do the same. I mean, do you really? When you're sitting there holding that gorgeous, and they are gorgeous. I got it. I mean, they are holding that gorgeous iPhone or holding your Evo or your Samsung Galaxy or whatever the latest generation is, even your BlackBerry. You're looking at it. Does the first thing that when you think, my God, I could watch TV on this. I can get movies. I mean, you know, Hulu's on the and Netflix. I have never thought, wow, the buzz is gone, isn't it? Okay, this is going to get... what the hell was that? But no, I don't look at these smartphones and think, boy, you know what? You know what this thing needs? Oh, it's back. You know what this thing needs? This thing needs a radio set. This thing needs an FM radio because I can't get enough of Rick in the Morning or Paul and Goober. Just doesn't happen for me. No. Call me crazy, but I mean, I don't even listen to it in the car anymore, with the exception of a little bit of right-wing radio, just to find out what the other side is babbling on and losing its mind about. Honest to God. Forcing it. But you know what? Pay attention, or they will. They really, really will. So that's the beginning of Moran Monday, and we got a lot of other Morans tonight, and we're going to have a lot of fun. This is America's listener-supported liberal voice. This is The Horn. I'm Bob Kincaid.
This is KAOS. You and I are listening to Chaos in Los Angeles. Let's go to the telephones now and take a request. Yes. The radio waves in your head.
Yeah.
Okay, that much worked out nicely enough. And by the way, for those of you who don't know, I got a couple of emails. That's Roger Waters from Radio Chaos. It's a brilliant album. Didn't get the attention that it deserved. Roger Waters is a genius any way you slice it. Marty writing in, and yeah, he likes the Eagles and Billy Joel. Well, we'll just have to agree to disagree. I liked them too the first 332 million times I heard them. I was scanning it. Now there's an example. I was scanning across the radio dial as we were driving along the other day, and heard the like two piano notes of Piano Man. Then I started screaming, "Jesus, turn it off! Turn it off! I can't take it anymore." Marty did note that he said, "You don't sound quite normal. The lows appear to be clipping. Remember, Mercury is retrograde." There's a couple of things there. First of all, when have I ever sounded quite normal? But I think I get the point. Yeah, Marty, you're right. We could maybe the RIAA and the RIAA can push Congress to mandate the inclusion of 8-track tape decks on our smartphones. You know, because that's what I really, that's one of those that I really, really love, the 8-track tape deck. You know, where, ooh-hoo, witchy, and, yeah. But we have, we got tons of more ends tonight. And by the way, a program note. Just remember, no program on Wednesday. There will be no prayer meeting Wednesday. We'll have to cram it all into, like, prayer meeting Tuesday or prayer meeting Thursday or Friday. I don't know about Thursday's program because Agnes is going in for the surgery this week. And thank you very much for all of your kind thoughts. She will carry them with her to the hospital. And she, you know, it touches her. It really does. She's got a very, don't tell her I said so. But she's got a very soft heart, and like I'd show her the emails you guys were sending in, and you know, a little tear runs down her cheek, and it's like, "Well, I married a marshmallow," and she, "Shut up, tough as nails." That's what she is, tough as nails. But yeah, thank you for your kind good wishes. No, it is Moran Monday on the horn. But before we go to other Moranity, I did want you to have the program note, and we'll be talking later in the evening. I want to highlight one of Matt Osborne's new posts over at Crooks and Liars. And it's entitled "Greek Democracy," and it's a fascinating, and it's a Matt's, you know, Matt's position is not entirely my position, the thesis of his posting. But what's fascinating, oh, I'll go ahead and talk about it. By the way, if you're on hold, please stay there. I'll be to the phones in just a second. "Greek Democracy" is the title of the post over at Crooks and Liars. And like I said, I don't entirely agree with Matt's thesis on this, but there's something fascinating going on. And I have hardly ever seen it in the blogosphere. Matt's actually engaging in a dialogue. People are saying things, and Matt is typing back. He didn't just post the thing and walk away like so many bloggers do. It's kind of inspiring to see. It's incredibly responsible. Agree or disagree with the thesis. Defeated. Agree or disagree with the thesis, there is a dialogue going on. It's almost like conversation blogging. It's almost like something sort of rolling over from what we do here into the blogosphere, because that was always what my main rap on blogging is, that it's a post and then everybody offering their thought on it and a great big look at me, look at me, look at me. But I started watching this about an hour before the program started, and it was just really neat. It's an actual dialogue taking place in semi-real time. The other Matt Osborne thing I wanted to mention to you, also over at Crooks and Liars, his first video posting went up Friday night. We all live in a U-2 submarine. You may remember the discussion of Michelle Bachmann's little Shaggy Patriot story. Matt took the very best of that, distilled it to its essence, and turned it into the best video he's ever done. It is. It's his best work. And doggone it, the thing's gotten something on the order of 1,600 views and 370-some downloads so far. If you haven't seen it, go and watch it after the show. You can also find it posted at my Facebook page if you drill down a little ways. My Facebook page got spammed this weekend. And, you know, we focus mainly on the apocalypticists and the loonies of right-wing Christianity, but it's always worth remembering that there is right-wing loony fundamentalist Islam, and I spent 78 minutes of my life watching this spam video that was just crazy. I do not recommend you go and watch it. I mean, I'm not telling you not to. It's just not worth the 78 minutes of your life. Trust me, they got 78 of mine, and I'm still pissed off that they got it. Just loopiness. You know, when we talk about these prophecies and stuff, whether it be Christian or Muslim or anybody else's, why don't we just admit that what they were? These guys were mentally unstable and hallucinating their brains out. Because, see, back then, they didn't know the difference between sane and insane in many ways. I mean, if you were hallucinating, you know, maybe the God spirit was on you. Even Socrates. We think now that Socrates was epileptic or something. But for all they knew, the God spirit was upon him when he was just standing stock still with drool running down his face for a while. You know what I mean? Oh, it was 78 miserable minutes. And I really didn't appreciate. I've never had anybody do that to me before. I've never had my Facebook page spammed before. And I hated it. I felt violated, especially because it was religious in nature. Feh. But you know the phone number, 877-443-2366, 877, the numeral 4, head on. On your nickel, it's 304-658-3333. Email comes rolling into bobkincaid@gmail.com. Let's do go to the phones. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey.
Hey, Juanita.
How are you?
I'm pretty good. How about you?
You sound like you're in a pretty good mood.
Oh, I am. It's Monday. It's my favorite day of the week.
Oh, good. That's nice. I got a little aside for you, a little trivia question.
Okay.
I like to work visit one website where you can work puzzles from all over the world.
Mm-hmm.
And anyway, I worked one this morning, and anyway, you get like a saying or something, and it said... one of the most popular authors in the USAR. I don't want to do it. It ain't that anymore anyway in Russia.
Mm-hmm.
Guess who it is?
Tolstoy?
No, it's not a Russian.
Then you've got me.
It's one of your favorite authors.
Twain?
Yep.
Oh, good, 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 good.
Anyway, the two most popular are Tom Sawyer and Huckleberry Finn. And they've printed so many of Tom Sawyer till they've had like 100 editions of that.
Wow.
I just thought that would be interesting.
Absolutely. You know, Mark Twain has a universal quality about him.
They said he's been popular for years over there. I just thought that was kind of interesting. Because you don't know what you're getting until you start.
I just wonder how he translates.
I don't know.
Of course, not being able to read or speak Russian, I'll never know, but it would be interesting.
Yeah, it would be kind of interesting, wouldn't it? But obviously, it translates well enough for them.
I guess, because, you know, so much, there's a whole lot of dialect writing in Huck Finn.
Yeah, yeah, Oh, yeah.
And I just can't imagine how you translate that over, but I'm sure somebody knows.
Yeah. And they like it. They love it. He's one of their favorites.
Well, I feel, I honestly, Juanita, I feel better about that than the French being crazy about Jerry Lewis.
Well, you know, I used to really like Jerry Lewis, and I don't particularly dislike him now, but his movies just weren't that good, as a rule.
Right.
And he admitted that. Somebody told him, said, you make your movies really cheap and fast, and he said, you're right. But they love him, you know, so whatever.
He is a comic genius.
Huh?
Yes, nothing. I'm just being a smart aleck. You know, he's a comic genius in France.
Well, tomorrow is our runoff election.
Well, no, it's your primary, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah, that's wrong. It's not runoff.
Yeah, you're not. You haven't gotten to the runoff part yet.
And poor old Green, he still don't remember who he voted for. He ran for a Republican congressman, he said, when he was like 20-something, and he said, I regretted it ever since. But he cannot remember. They asked him again. They asked him twice. And he said, I just can't remember.
That's beautiful. Well, that's, you know, that's the Reagan defense in action. Well, to the best of my recollection, I recall that I can't recall that I remember.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Yeah. Do you think he really didn't? Or
he... Oh, he knew it all.
Do you remember that skit they had on Saturday Night Live when he was president and Tom Hartman that got murdered?
No.
His wife killed him?
No, that was Phil Hartman. Yeah.
Phil Hartman, yeah. And you know, he played Reagan in a skit, and he would like have people come into the office, and he would act like real scatterbrained and all, and then he would go back in with his staff, and he'd just be this brainiac, you know, he's getting everything together. I thought it was kind of nice about him.
Phil Hartman was definitely a genius.
I know it. I know, that was really sad. But anyway, our county is trying to get they're trying to get people like out here. We're kind of a rural area, you know. We don't have a town here. We got a few little grocery stores and service stations, and that's about it. It's a suburb. And I got neighbors that they've had this pet pig for years now. It's huge. They had another one, too, but I think somebody else took it. And they've got chickens. And I've been thinking about getting me some chickens. And now they're saying, oh, you know, it bothers people. Roosters make too much noise. So I said, all it is just trying to get more money out of us. And, these people, there's never a smell from that pig.
No, it only gets nasty with pigs when you're industrializing the process, and you've got, you know, little inland lagoons of pig nasty.
Anyway.
Oh, by the way, Jim just dropped me a note, Juanita. He said Hemingway is very popular in Russia as well.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's good. You know, I've never really been able to read his books.
Why is that? I mean, it just...
Never... I don't know. It just seemed... They say write simply, but it just seemed too complicated for me. I haven't tried them in a long time, but... I don't know.
Well, in fact, I found a copy of... what was it? A Farewell to Arms.
Uh-huh.
Laying around the other day, and I tossed it over to Margie, and I said, well, you're 16. Time for Hemingway. Oh,
did
Daddy.
You read it?
I don't think she has yet, but I have hopes that she will. Right
oh,
now,
her.
She, okay. Right now, she's in the middle of an.
Her.
No, to Margie. And right now, she's in the middle of another vampire book.
Oh.
We read a lot of vampire books. Well, not we. I don't, but they do.
I had too many nightmares when I was growing up, so I don't care for those things for myself.
Yeah, see, I mean, if I see Count Floyd from the old Second City TV show, I have nightmares, so I just stay away from that stuff.
Yeah, it's just really creepy. I got over a lot of stuff after I got grown, you know. I used to be scared of Frankenstein, and there was a movie that, when I was little, came out that called Beast with Five Fingers. You ever heard of that?
No, but I'm sure it would horrify me.
Well, it was. It just scared the dickens out of me when I was a kid, and it's about this guy that dies. I think he's a murderer, and his hands are cut off, and his one hand is alive. He inhabits his one hand, and they call it the Beast with Five Fingers, and it goes around, you know, murdering people. And...
Well, I forget who it was. It was Brian, as a matter of fact. It was Brian one night who mentioned the Colossal Man. And I used to have nightmares about that when I was a kid.
Yes.
Even when they'd show it on Dialing for Dollars at 3 o'clock in the afternoon.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Well, you're talking about the vampire stuff. You know, it's really popular now.
Oh, gosh, yes, especially with the HBO series True Blood.
And they've got some of the kids in schools, they're biting one another on their necks, you know, that's a big deal.
Oh, they're tattooing each other over Twilight, and it just makes me crazy.
Well, you know, we had a murder down here where this kid, he was supposed to be a vampire. I don't know if you ever heard of it or not, but he would, he was dead serious, and he kind of reminded me a lot of Manson, you know, he was so sure of himself,
mm-hmm.
And his mother she was all for it. She just was right along with it, and a lot of people live that gothic lifestyle, but he lived it. He had a girlfriend, and he beat up her parents, you know, just killed them horribly, and he, you know, wasn't ashamed of it, you know. He thought it was all right. And they would suck one another's blood, you know? And to me, that's creepy. I'm sorry.
Yeah, no, I don't think that's just to you that's creepy. I think we can just generally say, that's creepy.
Yeah, but like I said, I had nightmares when I was little, really bad, and that didn't help.
No.
Help me. Anyway, I'm just talking, so... I want to wish Gladys the best.
Oh, Agnes?
Where did I get Gladys from?
I don't know, but if I see her, I'll wish her well for you.
I think somebody I knew named Gladys, and I was, where did that come from? But anyway, you know I know her name.
Yes, yes, I know.
Agnes. Right. I want to wish her the best, and I've had a lot of surgery, and I know that it's aggravating. Well, you have to put it off because you get your mindset to do it. And I can understand, you know, but I just hope everything goes okay this time and she can go ahead and have it done and it'll be a big success for her.
Well, thank you very kindly. And yeah, it is frustrating. It's like having to go through it twice.
Yeah.
You get it. You get your mind right the first time.
Yeah,
and
right.
No. Come back next week.
Yeah. I got an echo on here. Do you?
No, it's not coming back at me, but it's I got all kinds of weirdness going on here.
Yeah.
That buzzy business was driving
me
crazy.
When you first were on, you sound like you were holding your nose. You know how you sound when you hold your nose?
Yeah, that's exactly, it was terrible.
But I have a problem when I'm holding online. I can barely hear the program. I'll hear little snatches.
Well, I'm glad you mentioned it. I'll get into
it.
Yeah,
it's been going on for quite a while.
I'll get into the magic box and see if I can fix it.
Okay. Okay, well, you take care.
All right, you take care, too.
Okay.
Later, Juanita. Bye now. And happy voting tomorrow. Tomorrow is primary day in Florida, and it should be, it's just in Florida. It's just like when the circus comes to town. The Reverbo writing in, you know, our columnist from Cavalcade of Crazy at HeadOnRadioNetwork.com, He says, whenever I'm staring at the paint dry and speaking like a marsupial, that's when I know the possum goddess has a hold of my brainstem and ain't letting go till I've completed my platform for this Saturday morning's manifesto in my bathrobe and cup of coffee from the second deck of my apartment. I don't know about Socrates, but that's how I always know the difference between a hangover and a holy moment. And, you know, telling, you know, it's that whole God grant me the grace to know the difference kind of thing. Because, you know, it could be a hallucination, and the next thing you know, you got billions of people all over the planet following your hallucination. Straight out of Life of Brian, follow the shoe, no, the gourd. How about we don't follow it? Well. Ron and Raleigh said, today's vampires couldn't scare diddly squat. They're a bunch of wan, angst-filled posers who do a crap load of navel-gazing. After all, the Twilight series is a Mormon celibacy metaphor, and that it very much is. So, yeah, Twilight. And, well, you know, another book I'll never read. Never got around to Harry Potter either. I guess The Lord of the Rings just kind of ruined it for me. I've read some other stuff, but pretty much Lord of the Rings. Onward, back to the phones. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, so for sale, baby shoes never worn.
Again?
For sale, baby shoes never worn. That's a Hemingway's short story.
Oh, yes, it is.
The shortest story ever?
Yes.
Yeah, I love it. Anyway.
And there's another one. You caught me off guard. Another favorite of mine is one called Hills Like White Elephants.
Oh. No, I don't know.
Is that
Hemingway?
Yeah, it's Hemingway, and it's a short story about the aftermath of an abortion.
Oh, okay. Well, no, I just always thought this, you know, that one is sort of the original flash fiction, you know?
Yeah.
Because I suppose it is a complete story. But, that one just popped in my mind because Juanita was talking about she never really got with Hemingway. I mean, I think Hemingway is fairly straightforward. It's Faulkner who used to drive me around a bend.
Well, and then there's those moments that you just decide to jump into the gin bottle and haul out the James Joyce and have done with it all.
Well, yeah, well, that's, no, that is beyond, except for Thomas Pynchon. I had a friend who wrote his thesis on,
Gravity's Rainbow. Oh, Jesus.
Good night. You know what I'm saying? I'm like, where is...
Well, Thomas Pynchon wanted to be James Joyce.
Yes, I know. But it's, you know, that... No, but it's so over the top. And the fact that my friend could actually, you know... Yeah, anyway. Yikes. But, I was just calling because you were talking about the whole radio thing. You know, damn straight. I'll tell you something. Back years ago, you know, back in... Well, I used to be a DJ in Europe, right? I lived in Europe and worked at a club DJ, which means I wasn't talking so much, believe it or not. It was more mixing music and stuff.
Right,
like
sure.
House music.
Yeah.
Dance music. Anyway, so, I mean, that allowed me to live in Europe for a couple of years. Trust me, it was well entertaining, and, you know, I got up to all... Let's just say I got into all kinds of trouble. No working visa, nothing. It was straight up criminal. But I was thinking about that because what you say about, yeah, how dare, you know, I'm like all over this internet because I like house music. I certainly can't turn on my FM station and hear it.
No.
I just hear a bunch of crap. So I can go online, go to a billion different streams. Oh, I think I want to hear some Chicago house. I'm like in heaven. Background music. It just goes on and on. So why in the hell would I want to fall back to that trap you were talking about?
Yeah, it's
disgusting.
You know, and that's the thing. The smartphones aren't cheap to begin with. And it, why I would want it, well, anybody who's ever bought a new computer, for instance, knows that they come with a bunch of damn bloatware. And you get a new smartphone and you go through and you have to pull the bloatware out of that too. And I saw FM radio and went, well, goodbye.
No, but it's so hideous that they're actually, I mean, this is that monopoly capitalism, you know what I mean? But it's just so blatant.
Well, what drives me the craziest is this notion that they feel like they have, it really is, it's buggy whip stuff, Sandra. They feel like they have a right to drive us back to the crap that we're rejecting by not listening to.
No, what happened to the sovereignty of the consumer? You know, that whole business they're always shoving down our throats until it's not convenient, I guess. Now, consumers have decided that, looky-see, I can go here and get anything that I need as far as music, you know, and what I want to listen to, yet we're going to have an industry that's going to say, no, we're going to harness the power of the state to force you, consumer, back to that. Oh, you're right, the way you described it. It gave me my head was pounding thinking about, yes,
well, it's
horrible
so,
music.
It's so
it's a horrible commercial.
It's so Luddite, Sandra. And you know, look, I mean, we're streaming this program.
But that's what I'm saying. And it's
why
like,
not, you know, why don't they just invest in the infrastructure of the stream? And the answer is fairly simple. Because sooner or later, the raison d'etre, if you will, of the big-ass tower and the transmitter and the big power bill and the Herb Tarlick guy with his sleazy, greased back hair getting a cut out of every advertising sale, he goes away.
Well, no, and that's the whole thing with how I was telling you how much faster it is over in Europe with the Internet, and the reason why it's slower here is like light bulb. Oh, right, because they want to get us ready for the two-tier, so they'll speed it up. You see what I'm saying? So, I mean, you're absolutely right. We have to look at this because this is more of the Google Verizon stuff.
Yeah, it is, and maybe, you know, maybe that wasn't – I'm sure that the well-paid talk show hosts are out there leading with – the Muslim Death Star, you know, I'm sure it's not a mosque anymore. It's probably been elevated Death Star status, with Imam Vader. But, you know, I see this and I feel in a way threatened.
Well, no, the whole thing is threatening because, you know, we're talking about getting your beak wet. Well, that's how I feel about the access, the type of music that I like. And other niches that you've discovered. You see what I'm saying? Where it's delivered. I pay my monthly fee for this crappy high-fee internet. That should be the end of my contribution to this mega corporation. After that, it's between me and my computer. You know what I'm saying?
Amen.
It's just like, so I resent, and I've already called the FCC. I've actually sent letters. I'm all over this because this is, you know, this is the last sort of democratic, you know, where I can be free. You're talking about freedom. Yes, this is freedom. I loathe the idea of gatekeepers in my information in any capacity. I barely watch TV anymore, Bob, because I can construct what I need. You know, I consider myself intelligent enough. I can figure it out. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, but the thing is, Sandra, the buggy whip guys hate you for that.
Well, it's enough gatekeeping already with Windows 7. You understand what I'm saying?
So,
I upgrade my computer because, that's whatever. I'm trying to start this grad school, so I need to get everything together. But you got to be a goddamn computer scientist to get through this.
Oh, yeah, without a doubt, and you know, it's like Vista was sort of a bump in the road between XP and 7, so that we'd go, oh, I hate this.
Well, no, 7. Hey, listen, to be honest, 7 is so much more stable, and I'm like,
oh yeah,
hell?
Yeah, it's
what's happening?
Yeah, why couldn't you do this in the first place?
This is what I always say about Microsoft. It's not consumer ready. It's a disgusting corporation. Because they put out an inferior product, and you're stuck with it. It's bullshit. And I can't buy Apple, because I'm not going to pay that much to that other freak.
No, the Apple tax?
Mr. Liver, I want one first. No, I'm not giving money. I mean, I bought an iPod, you know, because I kind of, back to my DJing and the house music, you know how it is.
Sure.
So I had to hold my nose. But when I do get a smartphone, I'm going to get an Android or something. I don't know. I can't deal with Apple. I can't.
No, damn straight. Android's the way to go.
No, when he crosses over, man, I'll come back. I am not a Jobs fan. I think he's disgusting. He went to a college I went to, read college, dropped out.
Yep.
You know, and they all praise and thank that fool up there all the time. It's just like, ew. Anyway, I didn't mean to go off on him, but I'm not a fan, you know.
No, well, nor am I. I sat and watched, I think I mentioned it, I sat and watched him delivering a commencement address at Stanford from a few years back.
His voice, hello.
Well, yeah, that's a it's a voice made for print, but even beyond that, you know, he's sitting, you know, here's a bunch of kids who were either, you know, sons and daughters of privilege, and mommy and daddy paid, you know, incredible tuition and room and board, or else they got through on some level of scholarship, and they're going to graduate with, you know, crushing debt. And here's this guy, and he's wearing the robe, and he's, you know, the cap and the gown and all of that crap, and he's telling them to go follow their dreams. Well, you know what, Sandra? They can't go follow their dreams because the student loan secret police is following them.
Oh, yeah. Well, no, but it's funny you should mention that because the sort of default, that shit is unbelievable. I mean, I just think, yeah, keep it coming because at the end of the day, if you have to eat or pay back student loans, you'll just default, I think. I don't. In fact, I have no idea how people are able to wrap their head around a Stanford degree at $40,000-$45,000 a year. A regular BA in English from Stanford is costing $150,000. Hello.
It
ain't worth it.
No,
especially
in the liberal arts.
That's what I'm saying.
Because this country does not value the people who study that.
Well, it's just sort of it's beyond the beyond the debt load that they're placing on people. I mean, you know, I've like got myself in some I'm pretty much in debt, especially with this grad school thing. But what this is called hiding out in academia because I am not going to be starving, Bob. I'll be honest with you.
No, go out onto those mean streets right now.
I don't care. You know, I'll be having a dirt nap, and I'll still owe these debts. So you know what? To whoever's listening, F you.
And you know what, Sandra? The thing of all the stimulus and this and that and the other thing, why couldn't we try to figure out some way to let people work off their student debt?
Yeah,
or do debt forgiveness? I mean, every now and then it gets talked about, and then it's quietly taken out behind the barn and beaten to death with an axe handle.
Yeah, no, it's incredible. I mean, we're lucky that they've managed to retake a bulk of the loans with this direct lending now, where they've eliminated, you know, sort of Bush era in between. I mean, that whole thing, that whole giveaway to the private lenders was beyond disgusting. So I'll give it to the Obama administration for at least knocking one wall down.
Yeah, I mean, that was a great step forward. But, I still think I remember when, oh, gosh, I'm sorry I've forgotten the name. But he was on here talking about the American Service Corps.
Yeah.
You know, an idea that grew out of Peace Corps experiences and stuff like that.
Yeah.
We need that on a grand scale, but frankly, and this is, you know, the tinfoil hat, black helicopters outside paranoia moment of the program, I suppose, Sandra. I don't think we want people being able to use that phrase, I don't think we want them getting out of college and following their bliss. We've got to drive them into the not so tender, not so loving arms of corporate America, lest they go out and try to, and actually try to build a better nation.
Oh, no. I mean, that's the whole thing with the health care thing, too. No, we don't want people to have health care because then they might, open their own business or, be a teacher or do some other public interest work. Oh, no, we can't have that. I mean, it's all so ridiculous with the student thing. It's like, hold on. You got a whole bunch of young people right now, no jobs, with degrees, heavily in debt, no jobs, yet there is no effort to utilize this brain power. I'm not understanding it. It makes you think that they really do hate America and they really want it to fail. Because how do you waste that kind of potential?
In such cavalier fashion.
And you expect them to, because When I left high school, I was stuck in a horrible recession. That was the Reagan recession.
Oh, I remember it well, Sandra. You and I are of common age.
Exactly. So what that was our generation, those people who got a degree at that time, you were set for life to lose at least 30, 20, 40,000 of income, you know, that you would have been able to make just by that recession alone.
Absolutely.
And so with this crop people here, God knows how far back they're going to be set back. In fact, I don't really know, because I actually think this is a depression. So.
Well, I think it's kind of hard to argue away from that, because if you start actually taking into account the numbers of real unemployed, not the sort of massaged and softened and around the edges unemployment numbers that we routinely see, then yeah, those are depression era unemployment numbers.
Well, yeah, but I also was reading this article where the worldwide unemployment for young people is just off the Richter scale. It's out of control, to the point where you have the UN issuing papers on lost generation, that whole kind of conversation, you know?
And it's funny, this is, you say lost generation, and we started out talking about Hemingway. It was Gertrude Stein, wasn't it? You are all a lost generation. And that was after World War One, and then we didn't have that after World War Two, because we took a proactive governmental approach to making sure that good things happened for the veterans coming back from the Second World War, and everything's been downhill since.
Well, it's interesting with the sort of, you know, of course the New Deal was like a massive expansion of the federal government. In fact, it was when the power of the federal government came into being, basically. But obviously it was needed because it created this huge middle class. But what I've noticed now, which is kind of interesting, is that housing is now reverting back to just a consumption item. Do you know what I mean by that?
Yes.
And it's so interesting because that's what it was before the FHH, before the New Deal. It was just a consumption item that you used up, like a car or anything else. And this is what's happening now, because you can't have 20 million vacant homes and expect to use it as an investment, right?
Well, I mean, how long before the tumbleweeds start blowing through those neighborhoods?
Well, it's just kind of interesting because they're still trying to hold on to, like, housing as a means of creating wealth, like it served its purpose. But the way it's going now, you're not going to get the kind of appreciation anymore. So why the hell should you invest that type of money in it? I mean, these are massive structural changes that are, like, coming at us. And we're just left to fend for ourselves. That's what's killing me about it.
And nothing to, you know, I don't want to seem trite or anything. Nothing to reach out for, nothing to hang on to.
Yeah, and also no understanding of what's happening. Just the same old gibberish from the powers that be. When it's just, you know, there's no floor. The floor is gone. You know, the center can't hold. Blah blah blah. It's sort of, and they're still trying to pound this housing thing. Is when you notice that once that $8,000 or $10,000 tax credit went away, it fell out again. The bottom fell out.
Well, the other thing that I saw today is that something like 72% of the people who enrolled, and this is, you know, this isn't a knock on the Obama administration per se, because I don't want everything to just sound like it is, but something on the order of 72% of, okay, almost, here it is. Almost half of the 1.3 million homeowners who enrolled in the Obama administration's flagship mortgage relief program have fallen out.
Right. No, listen, I'm sorry, I must read this to you because it's applying to just what you said. Okay, this is a description of Obama. He has succeeded in discrediting progressive policy solutions by implementing regressive ones and allowing himself to be labeled as a liberal and a socialist, effectively defaming those ideologies. And I'm like, yes, That's it. That is why I'm so twisted, because this fool is doing regressive policies, market-friendly policies, and he's still calling himself or being called a liberal and socialist, and the policies aren't working, and they're being associated with it. This is
dangerous. Yeah, in a way, it's a sort of the Spiegelman for what happened with Bush, because if you recall, toward the end of the Bush presidency, the right wingers started hollering, conservatism is still our only hope, and all of us over here said, you know, what about 8 years of that? And their answer was, well, you know, it turns out he wasn't really a conservative. We're sorry, we thought he was, but on the other hand, with Obama, a lot of us are going, you know, that's not a liberal.
No, but
and the other side, because they own the megaphone, are going, he's a Trotskyite.
Right, so it makes it worse. As far as I'm concerned, I'm not going to say that Obama is as bad as Bush. That's not what I'm trying to say. But what I am saying is that this situation where these horrible regressive policies are being hailed as liberal is doing us such a disservice. Not to mention, it has completely demobilized the peace movement in this country. Where's the peace movement?
We've been, well, no, that's the thing, except for, and I don't know what to make of it. When you get a minute, go read what Matt Osborne put up at Crooks and Liars, Sandra, and let me know your thoughts or post them there or whatever. It's a great discussion, but you're absolutely right. What it boils down to is, and I don't know how it happened, we've been neutered.
Well, that's what I'm saying, but that's what has happened.
But it's not just the peace movement. It's you know, the single-payer movement. It's the labor movement. It's every movement that matters. You know, we're getting ready, like I said, come September 25th, we'll be in D.C. for Appalachia Rising. And part and parcel of the complaint there is that we've got an administration that said, we will make our decisions at EPA based on solid science. And yet here they are, and they're still thinking, they've got this notion in their head that they can regulate mountaintop removal to the point where, well, you know, most of us will just shut up, and the few neighbors who lose their way of life and lose their heritage and lose their homes, you know, it'll be a small enough number that maybe we won't notice.
No, but, yeah, and it's like where are you left to sort of operate? Obviously, you know, we have to get out of this, I don't know if it's a paradigm or what, but it's a horrible situation because I keep going back to that horrible Gibbs comment. It's like it becomes more and more absurd by the day when you look at that description of what Obama is doing to the progressive movement. Because you know how it is. When you talk to regular folks and you explain different possibilities, and you're not labeling it one way or the other, and it actually is progressive and liberal, they mostly agree with it.
Oh, they're all over it.
But if this fool is going to not combat what they're calling him and not embrace his central fucking neoliberalism, which is what it is, what he is, a neoliberalist, you know, we're just in big trouble because, like you said, the right wing, they have the nonstop horn. They're going to call him everything under the sun because he's black, but he's going to continue implementing these policies that are Bush light. Listen, Bob, I don't know.
And that's ultimately that's the question. I don't either. I have no, you know, with the Bush administration and their policies, you could kind of look at it and extrapolate it down the road and say, you know, something wicked this way comes. But with the Obama administration, I don't know. I have no feel for November whatsoever. I know there are those who say that that it's not going to be as bad as we think it is. But I don't know what happened, and maybe this is the trick. I don't know what happens if we survive November. I don't know what happens after it.
Well, that's the thing. I mean, you know, we're talking about. I mean, to be honest, I'm at this point now where so what if he loses the House? I mean, really. If they don't lose the House, what are we going to get, Bob?
From where I stand, Sandra, I don't have near as much of a beef with the House as I do the Senate.
Well, exactly, but I'm just saying the sort of utility of divided government isn't really at play because we're not even getting a look-see at anything remotely kind of policies we want. You see what I'm saying? What I'm saying is either way, it looks like, you know, we're ass out. That's not how I, that's what I see.
And one of the things about Matt's post over there that I mentioned, it's called Greek Democracy, is he's got a chart there. And it's hard to argue with hard numbers. And he does show that, you know, Obama has had a slimmer majority to deal with than either FDR or LBJ ever had to tolerate, you know, by a factor of in a couple of cases, maybe one or two in the Senate. Or, you know, maybe as little as, you know, 3 or 4%, but mostly considerably larger majorities in the Congress, in the House. And what I'm taking from what Matt says there is that we overly focus. And, you know, I guess I think it's the nature of the system that we tend to focus on the president as the person who's supposed to get the job done. But, you know, there's a reality there that there are numbers in the House and the Senate that don't support what we want.
Well,
and those and that's just and those are just naked numbers, Sandra, of Democrats versus Republicans.
No, I mean I agree with that, you know, in how it's supposed to be, but let's be honest, the executive branch, I'm sorry, it is in the forefront, and it really does depend on the personality that occupies it. And unfortunately for us, Obama is coming across as a gatekeeper continuity, not the sort of active type of president that we need at this time. You know, the thing about the U.S. was always interesting is that we've always had a way of getting these sort of personalities and people in place at the right time. You hear what I'm saying about that?
Yeah.
And it's always, and that's the interesting, one of the interesting things about looking at American history. It's like, you know, Lincoln, it's like, what the hell? You know, you look at the people on stage, you think, wow. But unfortunately, I just don't see those sort of actors evolving in the leadership role in America anymore since 1980, unfortunately.
And, well, you know, I go back to, we can get all... we can get very historical and say that, you know, everything changes in November 1963.
Yeah, okay. No. Actually, I think you're right about that. That is, yeah, for sure.
And that's one of those that really hurts for me to contemplate, and I'm not discounting the people who were old enough to actually grasp it, but, you know, I was in the cradle. My world was turned upside down and screwed sideways before I knew I was in it. And so it's only as a person entering, you know, my full adulthood that I began to look back and go, this didn't have to be this way.
Yeah.
Because, again, you know, just to extrapolate for a minute, Sandra, Kennedy lives. He's president till 1968. And then there's no way Nixon doesn't have a chance. And frankly, Vietnam doesn't happen. And so there's no Nixon administration. There's no Ford. Frankly, there's probably no Carter. There's no Reagan.
And don't forget, back to the Nixon, with him sort of taking us off the gold standard. I'm sorry. I just think that is another point that really should be marked in modern U.S. history. But anyway, yeah, go ahead.
No, but and you know, it's like looking at the 2000 election. For whatever reason we choose, you know, there's some people that want to blame the Naderites. There's others. I just tend to look at the Republicans and go, Jesus Christ, they're thugs, you know, and they stole the election.
I look at the unelected Supreme Court that, you know, thanks to, is it Jackson, whoever did the sort of, you know, way back when they did judicial review, that's when that all went to hell. I'm sorry, I know I'm going way back, but the Supreme Court is such a suspect institution, Bob.
That's the thing. You know, here in 2010, what part of our government isn't suspect?
Yeah,
but I'm not saying that from the standpoint of some teabagger. I'm saying that from the standpoint of somebody actually trying to engage dialogue on what's wrong and how do you fix it.
Yeah.
I just think
you know, that's why people are always going on about, oh, we got to reelect Obama because of the Supreme Court. I'm like, you know, wake the hell up. The Supreme Court is already off and running. And I'm not saying that it's not important, but looking at the question mark, he's disappointed. You know, once again, it's not that enthralling.
No, and you know, maybe it's, I acknowledge, Sandra, that there's an emotional component to all of this. I want somebody, I want something that I can get excited about, something to energize, and, you know, maybe that's part of the whole, you know, what's going on behind the curtain with the levers and the whistles and the wheels and the buttons, and maybe we'll get something that'll energize us. Energize the progressive, the liberal. You know, I don't even have it in me to say the left, because you and I share a common opinion of the existence of a left in this country. But is that, you know, what would it be? Is it going to be a sudden? Would it be a sudden repeal of Don't Ask, Don't Tell?
Yeah, you know, I don't know what kind of bump is needed, but I mean, I hear what you're saying. I mean, I tell you what would be a nice bump for me. Is a primary challenge to Obama. Sorry, I said it. I'm sorry. That's where I'm at.
Yeah, you mean the Bill Bradley versus Al Gore?
I don't really care who. More, yeah, just, you know. But I don't think that's going to happen.
No, I don't think so either. But, you know, who would it be?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, There's nothing out there, but I mean, if we're utilizing the system that we have, that would be an interesting development.
And I'm, you know, the fun part of the I guess the reality television aspect of American politics is just it's a lot more interesting to look over on the right wing side and go, God, which one of these lunatics are they going to run?
Oh, you see that? I don't know.
But the answer is that none of the above, and Jeb Bush is just sitting there biding his time until he's because look, they've got Cheney in the hospital with his no pulse, and even Liz has gone to ground a little bit. I think he is. I don't know. Did he get out?
I don't know. Listen, I still.
But they won't let George out. They won't, you know, they're scared to death for anybody to see George W. Bush and go, oh, crap, him.
Right. No. Petraeus and Bush, Jeb Bush and Petraeus, or just Petraeus, after the economy collapsed completely, Petraeus will come like some Caesar about to go across the Rubicon. No, I'm scared of the Petraeus factor.
Yeah, and of course, Marty pointing out the last time a Democratic president faced a primary challenger was 1980. That was Ted Kennedy against Jimmy Carter. And, you know, welcome to the White House, Mr. Reagan.
Oh, no, I know. I understand that it's, you know, really not a popular option. And to be honest, I don't, it's hard for me to imagine Obama being, who's going to run against him? Romney?
And that's what I keep, you know, no, Romney, the Willard Romney in his magic underwear will never get the Republican national nomination.
Well, see, the reason why I keep going back to Petraeus is because he did this interview where he was asked and he's kind of denying it. But yeah, right. I'm not buying it because years ago there was an interview of him when he talked to some Iraqi and they asked him about the presidency. He said, well, 2008 is too soon, maybe 2012. So it's out there. You know what I mean?
Oh, and
his ambitions.
There's all kinds of scenarios out there. I mean, you know that there's a faction of people who are quite certain that Hillary's going to get fed up and run in 12.
Okay, well, no, there. Yeah, I can imagine. But see, but, what you need to keep your eye on though is this economy. I think that if the another leg and it goes, you know, that's the key for Obama, I think.
And how much success the right wing has in framing the issues of the debate itself.
Well, yeah.
You know, whether it's the cat food commission or the deficit. You know, the you and I frequently discuss good old Paul Krugman. This latest one where he laid out the numbers of what the tax cut would actually mean.
Oh yeah, no. It's just hideous. The whole idea that they're actually we're gonna have to brace ourselves for the possibility of those insatiable rich fucks continuing not to pay anything, it makes me feel sick. the idea that a Democrat in the White House will not veto some madness like that.
This idea that by I'd never seen the number before, Sandra, but it made my eyeballs roll back in my head and just sort of sucked all the air out of my lungs. Refusing to let the Bush tax cuts expire, especially the ones on the rich, making those three permanent, and like I said, the number was just mind-boggling, amounts to writing a $3 million check for the richest 120,000 people in the country.
Yeah, well, no, but a recent...
Damn, and I got to go down, and I don't have those kind of... I sure don't have those kind of odds playing the lottery.
No, it's incredible. I mean, a recent poll, though, keeps stating that the general population is like, no, the majority, they want those tax cuts to expire. Although, it's only like 52%, and I'm thinking, dude, you know, the 48% who support that, that ain't the rich. The rich is only about 4% of that.
So yeah, no, those are the idiots who are going to pull themselves up by the bootstrap and be rich someday.
Right. But at least a majority right now is saying we need to let those tax cuts expire.
But, you know, the thing is, in the last few years, the majority said a lot of things. The majority wants the hell out of Afghanistan. Anybody listening?
Oh, no, I agree with you. No, I mean, but that's a whole different thing. I'm sort of looking at that and thinking, yikes. That's the American military and... I tie that in with the whole Moss story. I just think that's to keep the enemy there in our face at the expense of all these Muslims. But who cares about them, right?
Well, yeah. I mean, one of them dared to show up at the little hate rally down at Ground Zero this weekend.
That black guy?
With the hat?
Well, no, but that was really... You realize that a third of all American Muslims are African-American, right?
Yes.
That's a figure that I always think about because I'm like, back to that again. So, yeah, the way they attacked that fool, yeah, that was crazy.
And it's...
I mean, it's scary because it's so tight.
And, you know, the video's out there on the Internet to be watched by anybody who cares. It's very visual, so there's not much sense in me playing it.
No, it's something to be seen because it really is sort of the level of hatred for Muslims. I mean, I don't even think it's anything to do with religion at this point.
No, it's not. And then, you know, I mentioned, Sandra, that I got this spam on my Facebook wall this weekend.
What was that about? I didn't really understand when you said.
Well, I was like, what the hell is this? And then I remembered they had a booth in the exhibit hall at Netroots Nation. You know, with big splashy graphics, and did you know the Antichrist is already here?
What, they were at that conference you went to?
Yeah, they were at Netroots Nation. And I'm walking past, you know, I've talked about the wonderful gals from Bubble Genius, and there were these wonderful people who made quilts for people who were sick. And then the guys from Law Enforcement Against Prohibition that were our next door neighbors, and we just love talking with them. And over there, did you know the Antichrist has been on Earth for 472 years? And I just
a half a millennia, huh?
Yeah. So this thing, and so I guess they found me by virtue. And you know how I am with my Facebook page; I'll friend anybody that asks. And so somewhere along the way, I friended this person. And lo and behold, the spam shows up on my Facebook page of Dodge All, the Antichrist. And it's this goofy-ass video produced in Dakar.
What? Oh, wow, okay.
And it's all in Arabic with English subtitles, and most of the video are clips that have been ripped off from the Ten Commandments. I'm not kidding.
Oh, no, I don't want to know about that. And that was on your... Hey?
Yeah, so I went and watched it, and the thing is, you know, you got this ugliness over the weekend at so-called Ground Zero. There's another word I wish we could get rid of. And you know, you watch it, and all this anti-Islamic, anti-Muslim, and actually it's anti-brown people. I mean, let's face it, because these right-wingers don't think of Islam and think of their white next-door neighbors, even if they are.
No, know, once again, look at the makeup of these freaks marching. It's the same, you know, I'm sorry. I'm looking at the crowd and I'm thinking, okay.
So I go over and I'm watching the video on Sunday, and the whole thing is about how the Antichrist, the Dajjal is apparently in the hadiths or whatever. He was one of Muhammad's hallucinations of a giant beast. You know, just like John the Insane in Revelation imagined the beast.
Oh, God.
Okay, and he's got one eye, and he's astride another animal, and they're explaining that it's all allegory for, wait for it, Judeo-Christian civilization. And they lay it all, and this video says it all starts with Henry VIII.
What?
Oh, I'm not kidding. And I'm thinking, you know, we're sitting here, you know, liberals, progressives like us, we're arguing for not tolerance, but like George Washington said, religious freedom. And on the other hand, you know, you got another bunch of the shoot ourselves in the foot brigade. You know, boy, go get me the foot shooting gun. I'm going to put another round through.
No, I mean, that's the thing. It's like these people are always going on about the Constitution. I mean, since you mentioned Washington, and they don't even know what they're talking about, because I was also thinking about, what was the other quote I heard recently by John Quincy Adams about how we need to just stay the hell here and not go fight the various monsters?
Well, and, you know, there's George Washington, avoid foreign entanglements. And
yeah, but it's just sort of like, where the hell am I, and where are those sort of statements, statesmen, you know? And how is it that them founding fathers, they made hella sense?
Well, you know how bad off are we?
Oh, God.
You know, his son is a Looney Tune. How bad off are we when Ron Paul is the one who sounds sane? Paul breaks with GOP on New York mosque that isn't a mosque. And he says the opposition is all about hate and Islamophobia.
That was exactly. It was a perfect, it explained it.
And I know that Rand Paul picked up the phone and he's got Dad on speed dial. Hey, Dad, did you notice I'm running for Senate in Kentucky? Stop helping.
Well, that's because Ron Paul makes the connections with the endless war. See, I mean, that's where he's coming from on that tip, which is where I think we should all look to, because I don't buy it. I think it's such a bunch of BS, except when you look at the next war they all want to have.
And that's the point, Sandra. I watched this dumbass video, and those loonies over there are itching for it as bad as our loonies are.
Yeah.
But the problem is they're going to, you know, we the so-called normal people who are not interested in this deep theological debate between tastes great and less filling are the ones in the middle, and we're going to be catching the bullets.
Oh, no, but it's just over. But I resent the for-profit media so much. They are so disgusting in fanning this like they are, you know?
Oh, and John Stewart been funny as hell about it. But I want to look at him and go, you know, please, we don't even need to be joking about it anymore. We need to ignore these creepy bastards.
Yeah, at this point, no, that is the best bet, because it's so out of control, and like you said, so much of it is like a non-story. But anyway, listen, I should probably let you go, but you know I have to mention, who is my favorite football player these days?
Albert
Haynesworth. That Negro is way out of control.
Oh, I checked out the Washington Post today, and I forget what her name is, but man, on the sports pages of the Post, she rung him up.
Oh, no, they are hating on him, which, of course, makes me laugh even more, because he's just really throwing tantrums left and right with his $18 million in the bank.
Yeah, that's the fun part, the $18 million in the bank.
Oh, it's hilarious. And also, what was that? What else? Oh, I can't stand Roger Clemens, right? He's some sort of right wing pig, can't stand him. But hello,
yep.
Congress got the nerve to be indicting somebody?
Well, yeah, I mean, that's what I said. I said that last week. You know, the Eric Holder needs to pick up the phone and call the dude in New York and say, what, are you bored?
No. What about the the damn owners. How about putting one of them pigs up front if they want to talk about steroids? I never seen one of them up there.
Nope, nor will you.
Nobody was complaining.
But that's the thing. You know, Congress has time to have steroid baseball hearings. Congress has time to consider whether or not, you know, you need an FM chip inside your smartphone that you're buying to get the hell away from terrestrial radio in the first place. But, you know, can we pass a bill that would, you know, provide some unemployment relief? Can we pass a bill that would provide some, you know, more, expand on the idea of health care or insurance reform? Oh, hell no. But by God, if it comes to that, we've got time, and we've always got time to pass another, you know, another big old bundle of shrink-wrapped $100 bills for Afghanistan.
Oh, nonstop. And we also can consider the endless tax cuts for the rich, because you know that money will trickle down to us, don't you know? Come on, now.
Yeah, sure it will. But you know what? You can die of thirst waiting for that damn trickle, Sandra.
What is that horrible saying? All the tides lift.
Yeah. Yeah, but you know what? The folks that ain't got boats, they drown. It's predicated on boat ownership, really.
Like boot ownership, huh?
Yeah.
Right, I got you. Okay, Bob, listen, have a good evening.
Hey, see you, Sandra. Bye now. And onward we roll along. Hey, welcome to the program.
Well, I have to tell you about something Friday that happened while I was listening to your program, and I blame you, Mr. Kincaid.
Oh, what have I done now?
You.
Hey, you're the star. You get among the last words of the "We All Live in a U2 Submarine" video. Did you know that?
Oh, I did not know. I thought it was good. I would like to, in the next video, if we ever bring up the U2 Submarine as a meme, I'd like to see some actual music to it.
Well, John's ready to go. If I can just get off my ass and write the lyric.
Nice. Oh, on the subject of John, do you think fall is a possibility of the show coming back or not?
We got to sit down and talk. I mean, he's busier than a one-legged.
Right. I understand completely. So Friday, I decided to. I missed the hour because I was watching some IMAX documentaries. I recommend the Coral Reef IMAX documentary. Pretty amazing and quite the lesson. And if you watch it, it's like watching a time machine because it was done in 2003. So the stuff that they're talking about now, it's really powerful. So for anyone who wants to watch it, you can check it out. And the painstaking footage that they put together with the Crosby, Stills, Nash music, absolutely amazing. So there's your recommendation for a documentary. Yeah, so after that, I decided that I was going to sit down and listen to the Bob Kincaid show. And I sat down, I turned the computer on, and just as I was taking a bite out of my Dairy Queen Blizzard, I hear the following.
Pus.
And these cow's udders have pus.
It's not like John Fox hasn't been talking about it for years, but no, David, I got to take the rap on it. Oh, sure, I know how you are.
Because it was just when I was eating this synchronized.
Oh, you'd be surprised how many meals I ruin on a weekly basis.
Yeah, so I mean, not to pull a pun, but now I know what the term "utter to think" means.
Yes.
Yes. So
you were utterly disgusted.
Yes, I was. I shudder what's to happen next. All right, let's move on from that.
Yeah, it's only going to get worse.
Yes, it is only going to get worse. Speaking of worse, I actually sat through this completely dreadful David Mamet movie. Please do not watch it. It's called Spartan with Val Kilmer. Oh, my God. I just turned to my family like several times and said, I'm so sorry I didn't choose another IMAX documentary. I was apologizing left and right. I looked at my dad.
Well, so is it one? Is it another one of those ironically named movies, or is it actually a, you know, this is Sparta?
It's bad. It's so terrible. I mean, yeah, it does have to do with the metaphor of the Spartan soldier and so forth. But really, it just centers around something so garbage, like the president's daughter is kidnapped and Val Kilmer is this Jack Bauer hybrid, because I don't know if you know this, but David Mamet, he went through a transformation after 9/11, he went the Jack Bauer route.
Oh, no. I didn't know that. Yuck.
So after and that was kind of appropriate watching that because of what I witnessed today on the Tom Hartman show where he went 3 hours on the Not a Mosque controversy. And I was like, well, there's a disconnect here, Bob. This is a serious.
No. Say that again. No, Tom did 3 hours on the Not a Mosque?
Basically, yeah. And everybody, and you know, a lot of people were, I assume that a lot of people had the same sentiment that I had. And see, here's the problem with that, people, because I don't, and here's the other thing. He was arguing with this guy who was named Scott Wheeler, who was like this Republican.
Why do I recognize his name?
Probably because he pitches you things left and right. Because Tom's the one who just, come on in. And it's kind of cool, but here's the problem that Tom Hartman doesn't get. This is, and this is exactly what I would say to Matt Osborne. It's not about arguing or debating people. It's about the three words going together over and over and over again, stringing it together like a virus right into the nation's bloodstream, which is what? Muslim, Barack Obama, mosque, bonus 9/11, and stringing together Iran. That's what it is, over and over and over again. And it all plays together.
You know what surprised me? I guess what? Iran started up its first nuclear reactor this weekend, and even that couldn't break through the din of right-wingers having fits about this, you know, young Muslim, well, what would it be? No, YMIA, Young Men's Islamic Association. Even that couldn't break through.
You know, I was listening to Peter Werby, and he made a fantastic point. He said, regardless of what people think about what it came with the mosque controversy, the Islamic Center controversy, he said, people need to keep one thing in mind. Is that the protests, at the 9/11 for the mosque itself not being built, only about like 500, and we're being generous there, people are showing up. And yet the media continues to hammer this over and over and over again. And the question he asked was why. And he said, this is a perfect example of the media knowing which side to pick. And they pick that side. And that's why when I listen to people who say, we need to get out more and demonstrate more, they're going to ignore you. They're going to turn the cameras off, and they're going to look at the 500, 200 people across the street. They don't like dissent, people. That's the problem. They don't like dissent. And the other thing is you have to be, look, right now we are looking at the ramp up. I don't care what anyone says. We are looking at the ramp up of some kind of conflict in the Middle East that dwarfs either Afghanistan or Iraq. And the reason why is if you look around, I'm going to give you an example. My brother has not been able to find a job for 2 years. He's still in the Virgin Islands. Still in the Virgin Islands. He comes over here, they set him up with a training example and say, oh, don't worry, we're going to find you a position, but guess what? He has to come back after he's done with his bullshit training or whatever. He comes back, and he has to work his two or three jobs that he's doing in the Virgin Islands. So he's stuck there. Now, my point in saying that is the fact of there needs to be a distraction. And the ultimate distraction is a ramp up of some kind of conflict, even if it never passes. And if you see the thing, what's happening with the, this is why progressives and liberals, you need to listen right now. Every time you mention Barack Obama, 9/11, mosque during elections, it's going to cost you. Because there's so many people out there who want to find something to get mad at. They're doing badly. They don't know why. We have a lot low intelligent voter quotient out there who don't stay informed. It's not going to turn out like you think it is.
You know what? I think that, I mean there's a lot of stuff to be not terribly impressed with Barack Obama about. I don't think he should have said anything about the not a mosque, not at all. But right. But for us, and this goes back to what you were saying about giving free PR to certain people.
Right.
Why do we? It's easy, you know. It is, and I am guilty. You know, Moran Monday is dedicated to looking at right wingers behaving right wingly. But do the piece about the not a mosque. Explain that it's not a mosque. Explain that they don't have the money to build it. Explain that we've got a First Amendment and move on. I mean, if I understand correctly, David, the talk radio world, even on our side, has been absolutely paralyzed by this. It's like I don't know. It's like we're watching the lead up to some sort of damn war.
I want liberals to understand. If you think that this is just going to be a fractionary issue in coming years, you're crazy. Because I can drive you around all around Maine, and we can talk to all these people who know nothing about Muslims, and they will have an opinion on it. Who do you think is winning on that regard? Who do you think is winning? It's not progressives or liberals, and you need to understand that. Everyone who's listening, every time we go down this road, this is what happens. We brought this story out, and we decided to hammer it even more and just bring up the same code words over and over again. It's in the bloodstream. It's already toxic, people. There's nothing you can do about it. It's like Willy Wonka. You lose. It's over on that regard. You can't even fight. And you know what's funny? Is the fact that someone like Tom Hartman or another liberal critical thinking hosts will try to have a debate with these people and think it's not about rationale. It's not about coming to common ground. It's not about that. It's about promoting and street teaming a cultural brand of hate. Why can't you get that?
And I don't know the answer.
I think people really need to realize that what is out there, if you think that, of course, the economy is the big issue, but the more and more we ramp up this Muslim thing and throw in the cable TV news, and like I said, the more and more Iran starts acting and wilding up. See, the problem is the United States can act up and wild up all they want. But the fact that right wing is focusing so much on Iran, I had this discussion. Next time you talk to somebody who's really focused on Iran, say, so what's your problem with Pakistan? And you'll get a blank stare, people.
Oh, sure.
That's exactly what you want. That's exactly what they want. That's exactly what they want. They want to focus. And here's the other thing. The narrative that's being built for this is the crazy thing. It's almost like they're forcing Barack Obama to do something in the Middle East to prove he's not a Muslim.
And maybe you have just nailed down the whole damn thing. He's gonna have to bomb Iran. There's nothing to it. Because otherwise, he's obviously a Muslim. Jesus.
And, you know, one other thing about this is I want people to understand how deep this goes. And the pieces that you're missing, we all heard about that billionaire Saudi prince that nobody's talking about in the Wikipedia entry that's getting deleted about the Fox connection, which is just, you know, I'm thinking of calling in Alan Combs and asking him about the billionaire prince. But besides that, we also have people that are completely disingenuous operatives, and they're operating on a whole different playing field. I don't know, Bob, did I tell you about the fact of this guy, this phantom that's out on the right-wing airwaves called Reza Khalili?
No, I don't. No, I generally recall the topicality of our conversations,
right.
David. I don't remember that.
Well, I want people to pay attention to right now. Reza Khalili is being picked up by pretty much all of the cable networks. He's been on MSNBC. I don't know if he's been on CNN. But that's not important because he's been on all the right-wing airwaves. And what he is, Bob, now I don't like making this up. He's got a New York Times bestseller, of course. But the funny thing is here's what the funny thing is. His name is a pseudonym. It's not real. He claims he's an Iranian operative. And when he does interviews on the radio or TV, they black out his appearance. And he talks about Iran being an immortal threat to us. We need to watch out. But the crazy thing about it, Bob, is that instead of, and it's like propaganda on a level you can't even imagine. Sandra, listen to this. He tells you literally, he says, we need to be careful about Iran. And then the host asks him, well, what can we do? Well, there's nothing we really can do. And he talks in this altered voice where they slow his voice down. And it's crazy, Bob. It's crazy. So this guy comes out. He raises the specter and the phantom and the ire and the fear of Iran. My only question is, who is this guy? Why are all these networks lining up for him? And how can you trust him? This is the biggest boondoggle of all time in publications. This is like that fry on Oprah shit.
Oh.
Bob, I'll tell you what. I'm going to send you a clip, like a three-minute clip. He was on Dylan Radigan, and this guy wasn't asking him tough questions like, And I am for Dylan. Believe me, people. I like Dylan. I like how he represents himself on the airwaves for the working class people. But when it comes to something like this, and you don't ask tough questions, you don't ask, where are you from? So you have a pseudonym name, and it's like, how can we trust you? You're talking all this smack about Iran. You hide behind a screen. You make up a fake name. How can we trust you on that? Nobody wants to ask him that because, again, we're pushing the narrative, people. We're pushing the neoconservative narrative, and the Democrats aren't doing a damn thing about it. You figure it out.
I think you just did.
And here's the thing about it. The guy hasn't, you know what he's like, Bob? He's like Winston Smith in 1984. Like Deep Throat, only a fake Deep Throat. Because here's this guy, he comes with you and he tells you how shocking and horrific Iran is, but he doesn't have to reveal his name, people. He doesn't have to reveal anything. He can write another book. You know what they could do? He already said he's a CIA operative. What they literally could do is they could have a Team A and Team B, and then a Team A could come out and literally be like, well...
What if this Gomer turns out to be Curveball? Remember Curveball?
Yeah,
drinking screw top wine under some bridge over the Euphrates, and we based an entire war on him, even though the Germans told us that, you know, he was drinking screw top wine under the bridge over the Euphrates?
So the thing I don't get is, how can anyone who is a network producer, there had to be some thought in their minds.
That's, and by the way, it's amazing. The instant I was saying that to you, an email was popping up here from Sandra saying, curveball.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly, but see, the thing is that this guy's allowed access. And when I say, go check his name. I think it's spelled R-E-E-Z-A or R-E-Z-A-K-H-A-L-I-L-I. If you type in YouTube, Dylan Radigan Reza, you'll come up. He's given access. Well, that's not the thing, people. That's not the thing you have to... It's not the access that he's given on the cable news. Bob, it's the access that he's given on... complete access on the right-wing airwaves. The fact that he goes on Fox... And they just dole out everything and say,
Jesus, he's on Facebook. He's on Facebook.
See, that's the crazy thing. He's on Facebook. You don't even have to, there's no fact checking whatsoever on this guy. It's insane, Bob. I've never seen anything like it. I've never, on this level, if this is a con, this is one of the biggest cons. Oh, and by the way.
And yeah, here's the Dylan Radigan clip.
And right, and by the way, if you want to play it for people later on, you can just to show how crazy this guy is and what he's coming before with. But the other thing I wanted to mention was the fact that we already have the Iranian phantoms coming out again. I mean, the Iraq phantoms coming out again. Jeffrey Goldberg, who is one of the crucial people, one of the crucial linchpins for the ramp up of Iraq, is already titled a post on The Atlantic called The Point of No Return. Again, you figure it out. Ramping up Iran, no one's really going to talk about it because they're afraid to now.
Right, and that's, you know, again, I freely acknowledge, David, my black helicopters and tinfoil hats. You know, they started, we were wetting our pants. Jesus Christ, they're going to get a nuclear reactor, and then poor little Israel's going to be, you know, they're going to get bombed with the one bomb, and Israel's got 200 bombs, but it's the poor little Israel. And they started their reactor, and it's all not a mosque stories all weekend long.
Right.
And I want, you know, yeah, I can't know. I can hear the helicopters now. I can't help wondering if maybe it's supposed to be that quiet.
You know, Bob, the thing about it is, and the thing that people need to take into consideration with all these op-eds and the ramp-up of Iran, even if it doesn't happen, it still paints this president in a very bad light. I know people are going to disagree or debate the fact that, oh, there's not going to be that much damage. I mean, people, all you have to do is just drive around, look at the bumper stickers, or just go in any bar and just say the term Muslim. See what happens. See what happens. See how they and see how it's associated now with the president of the United States. Doesn't matter if it's not true. Doesn't matter. You can't debate it. That's the problem. You can't debate it because people have already made their minds up, and they're not going to research it. They've been spoon-fed.
I know. I've asked the question 100 times over, and I can't get a straight answer to it. Why are we? You know, why are we having ball sweat over Iran getting, you know, years from now, two nuclear weapons, when Israel's got 200, they got however many in Pakistan, they got however many in India, and all the king of Saudi Arabia has to do is call the White House and say, do my bidding.
You know what? I guarantee you, if I was to go into a bar, and the subject of Iran came up, and I just turned to them, just put down my pretzels, because they were making me thirsty. That's a Seinfeld reference for you people.
Hopeless.
Yeah, well, what about Pakistan? You know what I would get? I would get this answer most likely. And you're fooling yourself if you don't think that this would happen. What's your problem? You're gay. Or something to that effect. And we're in Mike Judgeville all over again.
Plenty to think about, David.
You know, and the last thing I want to say before I go, I found this absolutely. Sandra's going to get a kick out of this. Apparently, Philadelphia. Now you figure this one out for yourselves, people. Philadelphia is now charging bloggers $300 for a license. Now, how about this for one? So you blog and you have to pay a license of $300. It sounds like it could be working out if bloggers were actually making money, and that's exactly what's happening, people. On the eHow blog, for example, one woman who just does it on her off hours said when she was trying to blog for eHow.com in Philadelphia, they literally came to her and they said, you have to pay a $300 license even though she gets $50 a year. Again, you figure it out.
Read the book. Take care, David.
All right, later.
All right, see ya. Bye. Okay, I gotta catch up with everything that David just mentioned. My mind is awash. Lines open, only a couple of blinking lights. I'm going to take a brief break. You're listening to America's listener-supported liberal voice. You're listening to The Horn. You know the number, 877-443-2366, 877, the numeral 4, head on. We'll be right back. I'm Bob.
Everybody's restless, and they got no place to go. Someone's always trying to tell them something they already know. So their anger and resentment flow, but don't it make you want to talk alone all night long? Bohemus Radio. Sheriff's got his problems too. He will surely take them out on you. In walks the village idiot, and his face is all aglow. He's been up all night listening to Mohammed's radio. Radio. I heard somebody singing,
desperate, trying to make ends meet. Work all day, still can't pay the price of gasoline. And me, alas, their lives are incomplete. Don't it make you want to call the soul all night long? More Hammers Radio. I heard somebody singing soulful on the radio. More Hammers Radio. You've been up all night listening for his trumpet. Hoping that the righteous might just come.
Just be right.
I heard the general whispering to his aide-de-camp. Be watchful.
Thinking ahead means preparing for the future of our children, our grandchildren, and our wild, wonderful West Virginia. Developing our renewable energy resources is the best way to ensure a clean, sustainable way of life and safe, good-paying jobs for generations to come. Here in the Mountain State, our most abundant energy resource is the wind. Our ridges and majestic mountain peaks shape and direct the wind like stones in a mountain stream. Coal River Mountain is the ideal place for developing wind power. The Coal River Mountain Wind Farm will provide us with a source of clean energy and good jobs forever. We have the power to make our future happen now. Be a part of the clean energy solution for West Virginia by visiting coalriverwind.org or call 304-854-2182. That's coalriverwind.org, 854-2182.
We know you want to save big on your phone bill, and we know how you can.
That's right. We do.
We're saving more than 50% on our home phone bill since we switched to CityNet's digital phone plan.
Really? Over 50%?
CityNet's digital phone plan is only $24.95 a month.
Only $24.95?
You get unlimited local and long-distance calling.
Just $24.95?
And with CityNet's digital phone plan, you keep your current number. All you need is a high-speed internet connection. Get details at CityNet.net.
$24.95.
And, oh, this is cool. With CityNet's digital plan, I can use my home phone anywhere in the world with high-speed internet. No extra cost.
There's 20, and there's 4, and there's 95.
Did I mention CityNet is a West Virginia-owned company?
Did I mention $24.95?
Save at least 50% on your residential phone. Get unlimited local and long distance and keep your same number, all for just $24.95 a month. Visit CityNet.net today for more details. Some exclusions and restrictions may apply.
Tonight's final hour of Head On begins now. 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. Here's Bob.
5.5 minutes past the hour. I am Bob. Where does the time go? You know, I keep a short list of people I wish were still around. Hunter Thompson's one. The late, great Bill Hicks, peace be upon him. Prophet of our time is one. And just listening to Muhammad's radio there, I'm reminded that Warren Zevon is most assuredly one. My Lord. Wouldn't you love to have his musical commentary on all of this stuff long about right now? Yeah, me too. Me too. I love this email I got in from Ron and Raleigh's. Damned if the horn isn't the modern-day Algonquin Roundtable.
Before Sandra said it, I was thinking about Gravity's Rainbow and several lost weeks I spent trying to read that overly dense tract. Man, do we all seem to be on the same page. Yeah, and it's like the curveball reference. I was saying it, and it was popping into the email. That's the beautiful thing about what happens here. We learn to, we sort of get on track with each other, and, it's like great musicians can anticipate what other people are going to play. This is, well, it's like jazz radio only in talk, right? Yeah. Only not that sort of atonal stuff by Ornette Coleman that I can't comprehend. Well, that's Bob's shallowness moment for the evening. But I really can't. Just can't. I guess I'm a bad person. I just can't. a couple of observations. Randall writing in, he says, any serious presidential run starts 3 years before the election, so therefore Obama will have another term. Now, I'm not so sure. Anytime that you're dealing with the Bushes, and Jeb is out there, you know, we know the snake is in the weeds. I'm just not so sure. You know the number, 877-443-2366, 877, the numeral 4, head on your nickel, 304-658-3333, if you want to get involved with the program, jump right in, because the folks who were on hold through the break didn't hold. No respect, I tell you. No respect. I did want to take a minute and thank you after our conversation about funding issues and stuff and the fact that 35 people carry the weight for the horn on any given month. That number actually went up to about 45 over the weekend. And I'd say we brought in something on the order of another $100, another $150 toward the goal for the month of August, so that means we're at almost $1,300 trying to get to $2,500 by August the 31st. And that's going to be a sprint because we are fast running out of August with which to work. It is 8 days until the end of the month. We've got 8 days to go. We've got eight days to go about $1,200. Maybe we can, if you can spare it. Like I said, if everybody listened to this program, kicked in $10, who were able, mind you, I could shut up for months on end about, you know, fundraising and stuff. I wanted to bring something to your attention that I found very disturbing, namely the fact that it turns out. And I mean, this really is bothersome. And I hate even talking about the story, but just in case you were wondering, even you who are sane about this this not a mosque, not at ground zero, and don't want anything to do with the bigotry, guess what? Yeah, you're paying for it. You are paying as a taxpayer for the opposition to this 11 or 12 or 13 story building that's going to have a community kitchen, an auditorium, a theater, some cardio glides, some Nordic tracks, some Bowflexes, maybe a little bit of handball, maybe racquetball, you know, hoops. Like Al Franken said, you know, Muslim point guards. You're paying for it. You're paying for the freaks who are opposing this. You're paying through your tax dollars for an organization that is opposing religious liberty in this country. And while, you know, understand, let's make no bones about it, I think we would be vastly better off if there was no religion anywhere on earth. You know, I got done watching that stupid video on Sunday and just put on John Lennon's Imagine and let it just set it to repeat. Imagine there's no heaven. It's easy if you try.
No hell below us, above us only sky. And let it roll, and let it roll, and let it roll. But no, you're paying to oppose it. An article from Mother Jones by Nick Bauman and David Korn. President Barack Obama has declared that a group of moderate Muslims have the right to build a community center in Lower Manhattan, two blocks from the site, once occupied by... Yet representatives of a wholly U.S. government-funded outfit have joined the vociferous opposition to the Park 51, Park 51, where are you? Park 51 or Cordoba House project that critics have dubbed the Ground Zero Mosque. A leader of this group, which receives four, not, now these are not, no. This governmental group that's decided to oppose, in the name of the government, a leader of this group, which receives $4.3 million a year from the government, has even proclaimed that the community center could be a front for Islamic terrorism. Hell's bells. The organization in question is the U.S. Commission for International Religious Freedom. Interestingly, as Messrs. Bauman and Korn note, it's been the subject of an Equal Employment Opportunity Commission complaint for allegedly discriminating against Muslim employees. What's the name of it again? Oh, yeah, the U.S. Commission for International Religious Freedom. Wasn't that the same group that Dim Leader wanted, Islamophobic freak Daniel Pipes to be part of? You know, the guy who said that he didn't like being around Muslims because their food smells funny. Call me crazy, but I love the smells of those foods. The commission was created, report these gentlemen at Mother Jones, by Congress in 1998 to monitor religious freedom around the world and scold countries that aren't meeting religious freedom obligations outlined by international human rights treaties. The only source of funding it has is the U.S. government, that is, you and me. They've criticized, this commission has, they've criticized Vietnam for violation of religious freedom. They've criticized China for repression of Uyghur Muslims. But Nina Shea, who is one of USCIRF's nine commissioners, wrote a piece recently for National Review Online . She wrote that this place that's going to have an auditorium, a community kitchen, and cardio glides and stair steppers and Bowflexes and Nordic tracks could be a potential tool for Islamists. She then compared the leaders of the project to the blind sheikh. It has since been disappeared, by the way, from the National Review Online. How about that? How did she get on this commission, this bigoted freak, Nina Shea? Why, look, she was appointed to the commission by John Pumpkinhead Boner. But she's not the only one trying to using your dollars for religious intolerance. Leonard Leo is the chairman of the commission, and look, he's a big wig in the Federalist Society. He's also a teabagger, director of Liberty Central. What's Liberty Central? Why, that's the teabagging group that was founded by Virginia Thomas, the wife of Supreme Court Justice Clarence Slappy Thomas. It goes on and on and on. You can find the article over at Mother Jones, motherjones.com. Ground Zero Mosque foes bankrolled by feds. No. Bad headline, Mother Jones. Love the work. Bad headline. Ground Zero Mosque foes bankrolled by us. By us. Doesn't make me any too happy. How about you? Yeah, I know. And
being as how it is Moran Monday, I think it well, we simply can't evade this story. As I was hotting up the microphone that sounded, as David in Tennessee noted to me, sounded like a comb, it sounded like I was talking through a comb with wax paper on it. It's exactly what it sounded like, and I don't know why. But right as I was going to air, Lottie, our chat room moderator, sent me a story. And it's one of those, God, I hate this stuff. Quick, show of hands, who is Judge Royce Lamberth? Who is Judge Royce Lamberth? Why, look, he's a federal trial judge in the D.C., in D.C., in the D.C. federal bench. Not only is he the chief judge there, he's also, no surprise, a Reagan appointee. I think this is the lead pipe cinch winner of Moran Monday. This is a judiciary Moran. A bunch of fundies sued the government over stem cell research. You know, because it was destroying the little snowflake babies. Now, I can be a smartass about that, but the fact of the matter is, these are a bunch of religious fundamentalists who want to impose their religious views on you in violation of the First Amendment of the Constitution. So these fundies sued, and they argued that federal funding of stem cell research violates the Dickey Wicker Amendment. Tell me that one wasn't written by the staff at Second City. Just in case you were wondering, the Dickey Wicker Amendment prohibits the use of federal funds for, quote, research in which a human embryo or embryos are destroyed. Now, embryonic stem cell research, I want you to listen. This is reasoning, or what passes for reasoning, in the tired, thin, gray settlings between the air, between the ears of Chief Judge Royce Lamberth. Hey, anybody for some activist judicial branching? Activist judging? Here's one. Listen to this reasoning. If it doesn't make any sense to you, try a couple of shots of 90-proof liquor and we'll try it again after that. No, go straight to the 100-proof. He wrote this, Chief Judge Royce Lamberth, in interpreting the Dickey Wicker Amendment. Oh, my God, we do have a Dickey Wicker here, don't we? Using the shorthand of ESC, embryonic stem cell research, Chief Judge Royce Lamberth, Reagan appointee, dead from the neck up, probably for decades now, said ESC research is clearly research in which an embryo is destroyed. To conduct ESC research, ESCs must be derived from an embryo. The process of deriving ESCs from an embryo results in the destruction of the embryo. Thus, ESC research necessarily depends on the destruction of a human embryo. Anybody? Anybody out there? Help, please. Logic. Aristotle. Foundation of Western culture. That doesn't match up, does it? Because I can't make it match. ESC research is clearly research in which an embryo is destroyed. To conduct ESC research, ESCs must be derived from an embryo. The process of deriving ESCs from an embryo results in the destruction of the embryo. Thus, ESC research necessarily depends upon the destruction of a human embryo. Isn't that a little self-referential? If we're going to try to call that logic. Yeah, that's what I thought too. Doesn't make just a hell of a lot of sense. But that's what you get from right-wing activist judges. You say one thing, and then you use what you've just said to prove the point, or prove the validity of the point that you just said. Ouch! I mean, isn't it, a little bit like this? It is an embryo. It looks like one.
A witch. But you are dressed as one.
They dress me up like this. And this isn't my nose. It's a false one.
Well?
Well, we did do the nose.
The nose?
And the hat. But she's a witch.
Did you dress her up like this?
No!
Yes, a bit.
She has got a wart.
What makes you think she's a witch?
Well, she turned me into a newt.
Now, every time he says witch, just think to yourself, embryo.
A newt.
I got better.
Murder it!
God, I remember watching this as a seventh grader when it came out in the movie theaters. Maybe I was an eighth grader. I was probably too young for it, but I realized I was watching something very funny. And I never realized that the idiots there screaming, "Banner! Banner anyway!" would actually turn in to the majority constituency of one of the two major political parties in the United States of America. I really, really didn't.
Whether she is a witch.
There are ways of telling whether she is an embryo. ESC research is clearly research in which an embryo is destroyed. To conduct ESC research, ESCs must be derived from an embryo. The process of deriving ESCs from an embryo results in the destruction of the embryo. Thus, ESC research necessarily depends on the destruction of a human embryo that we've sort of posited by virtue of our own imagination.
Tell me. What do you do with witches?
What do you do with embryos? Freeze them!
And what do you burn apart from witches?
More witches!
More embryos!
Good. So, why do witches burn?
God, proto-teabaggers. Honest to God, they are. They're proto-teabaggers.
Because they're made of wood?
Good. That's right. The embryos are made of wood.
Good. So, how do we tell whether she is made of wood?
build a bridge out of her.
Ah, but can you not also make bridges out of...
embryos?
No?
Ah, yeah.
Does a wood sink in water?
No.
It floats. It floats.
Throw her into the bowl.
Throw it into the petri dish.
Despite defendants' attempt to separate the derivation of ESCs from research on the ESCs, the two cannot be separated. Derivation of ESCs from an embryo is an integral step in conducting ESC research. Indeed, it is just one of many steps in the systematic investigation of stem cell research. Simply because ESC research involves multiple steps does not mean that each step is a separate piece of research. What? That may be federally funded, provided the step does not result in the destruction of an embryo. In other words, this right-wing judicial activist ought to be impeached, should have retired years ago, Reaganite freak, has just ruled on the trial court level that all embryonic stem cell research must cease. Because somewhere way the hell back in the process, there was an embryo involved. One, maybe two, 12, who knows? But that all of the embryonic stem cells upon which research is being done for the betterment of humanity has to end because there are a gaggle of intolerant right-wing fundamentalist freaks who think that Adam and Eve rode to church on a damn dinosaur and talked to snakes along the way. And they believe every embryo is sacred. It boggles the mind. This freak has actually made embryonic stem cell research more difficult to do than it was under Dim Leader. Because, you know, Dim Leader said that some of it on a few lines could still go on. Well, this guy says even those lines, forget it. No can do. Ron and Raleigh's worked it all out for us. Failed logic. Let me see here. God is love. Love is blind. Ray Charles is blind. Therefore, Ray Charles is God. Notes right. Notes Ron. Same logic. Same BS result.
What also floats in water?
Great. Apples. Very small rocks.
Embryos.
China. A great gravy. Cherries.
Mud.
Churches. Churches.
Lead.
Lead.
A duck. Exactly.
Exactly. So, if the embryo weighs the same as a duck, Chief Judge Royce Lambeth, a Reagan appointee, will find that the stem cells that have grown 9,600 generations later, after the original embryo, that research on those stem cells still constitutes harm to an embryo, even though an embryo is nowhere to be found.
Like I said, I spent Sunday watching that stupid movie video Charlton Heston was in this thing. They ripped it off so bad. And I sat there with my head in my hands because I realized that there are people on the other side of the planet who ache to go to war with people on the other side of the planet, other side, and that they're willing to burn the whole world down to prove a BS point that, you know, angels or genies or something can dance on the heads of pins. And you and I are sitting here and we're normal and we talk about things like pus in milk and things that really are rather deleterious to the human condition, or horrible, horrible flooding in Pakistan, or all the things that go into any given evening on the Horn. And both sides
the Christian fundamentalists and the Muslim fundamentalists, they're not looking at each other. They're looking at you and me screaming, kill the heretic. Because, you see, they can both come to agreement that you know, we're the problem. And then they'll sort out their differences with each other after we're gone with chainsaws. Now, why would I call this goon an activist judge? Well, it has a little something to do with a case called Chevron versus NRDC, Natural Resources Defense Council. And the ruling from Chevron versus NRDC is that judges must defer to an agency's reasoning and the way that the agency reads a federal law unless that reading, that interpretation becomes so utterly implausible. You know, if she weighs the same as a duck, she's made of wood. You know, that kind of stuff. God is love, love is blind, Ray Charles is blind, therefore Ray Charles is God. That kind of implausibility. And only upon a finding that the agency's reasoning and interpretation is that implausible, only upon a finding of that, can the judge, unless he is a right-wing Reagan appointee, dead-from-the-neck-up activist judge, only then can the judge overturn the agency's interpretation. Now, this is not a final ruling, to be fair. What he did, Judge Royce Lambreth, is to grant a preliminary injunction or a temporary injunction while the whole case goes on. Who filed the suit? A group that is trying to find adoptive parents for human embryos created through in vitro fertilization because, you know, we really don't have enough human beings on the planet right now. Also among the plaintiffs in the suit, the Christian Medical Association. Now, how there can be a Christian Medical Association, I don't know. You know, what? Do they work with leeches and bloodlettings and black bile and ill humors? So all of this research has to stop. Science has to stop in its tracks to suit a bunch of fundamentalist, godforsaken fiends who would rather see people suffer than see desperately needed life-saving research go on. There we go again with those followers of the Prince of Peace. Again, one embryo, stem cells. Replicate stem cells, replicate stem cells, replicate stem cells. And let's say you're working on some lonely little stem cells in your Petri dish. And they were 12 generations away from an embryo. It doesn't matter to Chief Judge Royce Lambreth. For all we know, tonight, this afternoon, as the ruling was about to be handed down, some scientist, some medical researcher, was on the verge of a breakthrough that would cure something or repair something or allow the paralyzed to walk. No, that's Jesus' job! And the word came down and they said, stop what you're doing right now. But I'm on the verge of a Nobel. Save people. The blind will see and the lame will walk. Too damn bad. A judge in Washington, D.C. has just said that they all get to keep suffering while we bow and scrape and kowtow to a bunch of freaks who believe in talking snakes. And that the sun stands still in the sky because, you know, after all, the sun rotates around the earth. Who believe that the mathematical definition of pi is 3 because it says so in the Book of Kings. And you wonder, some of you, why I say that this world would be a million times better off with no religion in it whatsoever. Because you see, ultimately, that's the real race. It is the race of the normal and the decent and the moral and the ethical. To get to that Star Trek phase where we recognize our common humanity and work for its good and its preservation against the less filling versus taste great crowd screaming across the gulf that is filled by us, heretic, die! Where's Zeus or Thor with a good lightning bolt when you need one? And so the suffering will wait in the name of people who claim they follow a man whose mission was to cause the lame to walk. And the blind to see, and the lepers to be able to re-enter society. And they mock him, and they mock him, and they mock him. And the only damn shame of it all is that their hell doesn't exist for them to go to. Let's go to the phones. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob.
Hey, Jim.
Well, you know, Zeus ceases to exist when people stop believing in it.
That's the truth.
But, you know, as far as these people who claim to be followers of Christ, I wonder about that.
How can you follow Christ and think more of an agglomeration of genetic material than you do of a human being sitting in a wheelchair confined to it for the rest of her days?
Well, I have my own religious beliefs, but, you know, if they were circumvented by people like that, I wouldn't be on this program. Like I've said to you so many times before, these people will labor like scholars over the pedigree of their own intolerance and ignorance, but yet every damn one of them would have snored right through the Sermon on the Mount.
Or tried to leave early to get to the cafeteria. You're right, Jim.
That's true. They would. I mean, you know, I don't. I mean, what's this guy want? An embryo finder, the way they used to have witch finders back in Würzburg when they burned 600 women in 1 year?
They just want all this research stopped. They don't want the honest to God, Jim. They don't want the lame walking unless some faith healers laid hands on them.
Well, haven't we ever heard of the term "God's work must truly be our own"?
That is not one that is brooded about much in fundamentalist circles, Jim.
Well, see, I've never been really... Number one, I was never exposed to that. Number two, I've never followed it. And, you know, I've always believed that, you know, God will help those who help themselves. And these people are an impedance to that. That's my personal belief. I really do. And I cannot subscribe to these fundamentalists who, I guess in their own ways, they are so insecure in their own sense of karma and also for their own sense of well-being, absolutely.
Jim, they derive their sense of well-being not from any concept of salvation as you understand it or I was taught to understand it.
Right, and they transfer this to some type of negative, hateful thing that is designed to present itself as a solution to the problems of this world. I just can't understand these people, and I have I've tried to talk to a couple of them, but they simply won't listen to any form of reason or any form of compassion that would appeal to make blind men see or to make lame men walk or to ameliorate the human condition. They simply are impervious to it, and that's the reason I simply stopped talking to them. I'm not going to waste my time.
Well, it is that. But by the same token, Jim, we fail to look at their evil intentions and we fail to pay attention to them at our peril. You know, there's another story out there that I was hoping to get to and this evening, and if you don't mind, I'd like to share it with you because of the history that you have shared with us.
Thank you. Please.
It comes from the military. And there's a base called Fort Eustis, and
I know it well.
Okay, so a group of soldiers had been training at Fort Eustis all day long, you know, hot and sweaty. It was back in May, and the day was done. At which point, a Private Anthony Smith and a couple of other soldiers, well, the entire group, were all marched in formation to a concert. Being provided for them by an evangelical Christian rock band called Barlow Girl. They were given no option. This was part of the commanding, get this, Jim, it was part of the commanding general's spiritual fitness concert series. And there were at least two Muslim soldiers in the group that were the formation marched to the concert. And once they got there, they were given an option. They were told to split into two groups. The ones who wanted to go to the concert and the ones who didn't. Private Smith and about 80 other people decided not to go to the concert. They were at the time being pressured to go to the concert. And they're and rather than saying, well, okay, you know, these guys are going to the concert, you know, do something. You know, go to the mess hall, whatever. They were sent back to barracks on complete lockdown. No access to electronic devices. It's a punishment measure.
Well, Fort Eustis is the headquarters of TRADOC, which is Training and Doctrine Command. And when you have the commander of that particular installation wanting 100% attendance, and he doesn't get it, he's going to get all wet down there.
But does he not understand that he's constitutionally prohibited from forcing religion down people's throats?
Bob, in the military, and this is the way it is, their purpose is to defend democracy, not to practice it. That's the only thing I can reply to that. That's just doctrinal within the military.
But can we not defend democracy without the proselytizing religious converts?
I would hope so. I would hope so.
I mean, it is constitutionally prohibited and regulatorily and legally prohibited.
I mean, why in the world does the DOD chaplain's pamphlets and regulations provide for a number of other religions and just one? No, they're not supposed to do that.
The guy behind this is a General James E. Chambers, Jim. And apparently he is an evangelical. And he's the father of the spiritual fitness music events.
Well, he has no right to force that on anybody. If people want to go, that's fine. If they don't want to go, that's fine, too. It's not like they're missing required training and required things that are required by you know, regulation and things of that nature. No, he's not. He's definitely in the wrong there. Absolutely. Absolutely. But like I say, these individuals, they're exceeded by their own excesses and not to the betterment of anybody. I mean, you know, one in every four soldiers that we have today is having to have psychiatric counseling when they come back. One in every four. The VA can't handle it.
They don't. They can't even begin to.
No.
And I go back to what was it? The Bush budget of I can't remember how many years back, Jim, when they completely defunded the traumatic brain injury research budget, which is the signature injury of the Iraq War.
I have a second cousin who has that, Bob. I know what you're talking about. And back when I was in active service, I tried to, oh God, to defend these people and obtain for them their rights that are guaranteed by law, by DOD regulation or DOD directive or service regulation, and just by a common sense of decent humanity. And on certain occasions, I was told by higher-ups in the chain of command, you represent the government, not the soldier. I put up with a lot of shit in my life.
It sounds like.
I mean, I've been discriminated against for many things that I'm not going to even discuss on this radio. And I've had to bite my tongue and simply, you know, well, that's just the way it is. But it doesn't make it right. Didn't do me any good in those respects. Didn't make me feel any better about myself as a human being or whatever.
Didn't make you a better public servant or a better soldier.
But I overcame that in spite of that. And I never let those bastards get me down. Never. I always had to try to be one up, one better, and always look over my shoulder. And that has certainly left its mark upon me. And I don't want to see that happen to anybody else. And I hate it when I hear this kind of stuff happening.
Well, sad, and that's the sad thing, Jim. It is happening to other people because, among other things, Mikey Weinstein, who runs the Military Religious Freedom Foundation, and he's a haven for soldiers and sailors and Marines and so forth who are being subjected to proselytization. And upon being asked about his clientele, he said most of the people that come to Military Religious Freedom Foundation, most of them are Christians who are told that they're not the right kind of Christians while they're in the military. I mean, there are some people who are Jewish, there are some Muslims, but most of them are Christians, you know, the Lutherans, Presbyterians, Methodists, whatever.
I mean, who in the name of God Almighty is to be able to determine whether you're the right kind of Christian?
Who? Well, apparently people with stars on shoulder boards.
Oh, I've seen so many of those people who are anything but Christian. And they think nothing of committing atrocities and doing horrible things. And I just thank God Almighty that I will not have to answer for the stuff that these guys have to answer for in their efforts to scramble up that chain of command until they get the next promotion. I had the experience of working with some grade officer, some major. And God, I despise that woman. And on her desk, she had a Bible that took, well, she must have had a Humvee to carry it in there.
Gutenberg knockoff.
And I was in her office, and I saw it, and she was, you know, very religiously going through it. And I just asked her, I said, Major, are you doing this for my benefit? What do you mean? I said, I can't notice the size of that Bible. And I pulled out a little pocket testament, which could fit in my shirt pocket. And I said, this will do for me.
My God.
Can you imagine the look I got from her?
Oh, if looks could kill, you'd have gone away in a basket.
Well.
But see, that's one of the things that most of America doesn't know, Jim, is that...
I told her, I said, look, I said, number one, you are likened to the Pharisee who is in the marketplace beating his breast, proclaiming how good you are. I, for one, am a poor sinner, and all I can do is retreat into the recesses of a darkened closet and beg forgiveness. And I said, I have nothing more to say to you. I don't respect you, and I believe that you are wearing your religion as some type of badge in which you can perhaps hope to gain some type of earthly gain. And I said, it just won't work. I said that to her.
What kind? Did you pay a price?
No, dearly. She did. She did. I outranked her.
Oh. Nice. It's nice to see the good guys win one once in a while, Jim.
Well, I mean, you know, it's just a matter of simply explaining to people who are higher up, look, this is fine. But, I mean, don't try to force yourself on other people.
Or your faith.
Don't try to force your beliefs on other people. And, you know, don't try to make their lives miserable because they don't believe the same things that you do. I said, that's only fair. And that's exactly what I believe was the spirit contained in those words in red in the scriptures.
I will not ask, and I do not know, Jim, how long ago that was, but it must be borne in mind that the American military has been overtaken in the last 10 to 15 years by people of that major's ilk.
Right. You're absolutely right. And any form of tolerance or whatever for the belief systems or sexual orientation or whatever that do not necessarily or do not at all detract from that soldier's ability to perform his mission or do his job, you know, they are causing so many other things to be brought into it that it is inimical to the mission. It really is.
Oh, it truly is, and dangerous to line soldiering, because we are actively creating the impression that we have built up a crusader army, and this news does go around the world.
Well,
those notions have real negative connotations in the part of the world that we're trying to subdue right now.
Well, I don't think you're going to be able to win hearts and minds like that.
But try telling that to an evangelical, Jim, because they've had the Great Commission beat into their skulls, and they're going to go out and they're going to bring people to Jesus at the muzzle of a gun.
I don't think I ever heard him say that you should do that.
No, I missed that verse where it says, pick up thy M16 and follow me. But you know what? They've got a Bible that says it. Apparently.
It's not the Bible I have. It's not the Bible that I was brought up to believe in. It doesn't concur with the fact that God is love.
They read, you know, you and I read, suffer the little children to come unto me. The right wingers and these fiends who are evangelicizing the military read that as, let's make the little children suffer.
I understand what you're saying.
You know, if they happen to be, if they happen to believe in the wrong religion, or in this case, if some raw recruit happens to be. I can't imagine that you know, that line up on the parade ground or in front of the barracks or whatever with some drill sergeant screaming, "Boy, are you a Presbyterian?" And it's not a drill sergeant; it's a daggum general. And that poses a tremendous risk for unit morale, and for the efficacy of our military overseas.
Well, it's not only a risk, it's a threat. It certainly is. And, you know, I've heard that all power proceeds from the barrel of a gun, as said by Chairman Mao. But I've never heard, well, yes, I have heard it too, but I just want to forget it. But in the minds of some people, that all religious beliefs must also proceed from the barrel of a gun, or through a misused or abused chain of command.
Well, I don't know what it's going to take.
Here's the thing. I've heard you talk about the Fundies and stuff like that and the things that you were exposed to when you were very young. And I just have a real hard time wrapping my head around that stuff.
Well, Jim, it's real, and it's more real than you may be able to comprehend, and that's no insult. And the real kicker...
Well, I know it.
Is that it is insinuating itself. I remember back in the day when Peter had his show, and I can't remember the name of the group, but there's a right-wing group whose sole purpose, the Institute for Religion and Democracy, that's it. Its sole purpose is to insinuate itself into mainline American Christianity and turn it toward this politicized vision of evangelical Christianity. And, you know, here's the dirty little secret. They're succeeding.
But when this stuff tries to insert itself into, number one, military doctrine, and number two, scientific research, this is dangerous. Not only is it dangerous, it's destructive. And it destroys the very basic tenets of the faith upon which these people supposedly build their beliefs. But they can't see the difference.
I mean, in this particular case that I told you about, young Private Smith and another anonymous soldier filed an equal opportunity complaint against their commanding officers. It was thrown in the trash.
Things that way have a habit of being carelessly mislaid. And those people who protest have a way of being persecuted and hounded out of the service, denied promotion, and their lives being made a miserable, absolute hell because of the particular beliefs of this two-star general or four-star. He's got to be a four-star if he's head of TRADOC to do that, or maybe a two-star at base level. I don't know. I don't understand it, and I'm glad I'm out of it, I'm glad I'm away from it, and I just hope that they will leave me alone, because there's nothing I can do to persuade them. You know, when I was a boy, I saw a movie called The Cardinal with Tom Tryon, and this guy was elevated to the rank of being a cardinal in the Roman Catholic Church, and he had a sister who was going to have a baby. But he followed church doctrine and let her die because the birth of that baby would cost his sister's life. I saw that movie when I was about 12 or 13. And I said, this I do not understand. How religious doctrine can be so inimical to the preservation of the life of a human being. But because he would not permit her to have an abortion, she died. Her part was played by Romy Schneider, the German actress. I've never forgotten. You know, there's certain things that you see when you're growing up that you just always stick with you.
Yeah.
And I have a dustbin of a mind anyway, as you well know. And so many of those things just kind of just collect in there. And I just never managed to dump those files.
And lo and behold, all those years later, it comes in handy on a radio show. So there's a reason it hangs on. Jim, I hate to say it, but I've got to roll.
Good night, sir.
Take care.
Bye-bye.
Bye now. You know, a proselytized military with the right leader can be told to do amazing, horrifying things. Whether it be committing war crimes or ignoring the Constitution and turning on the citizenry that they supposedly protect. It is discomforting, to say the least. Quick email rolling in from Rick in Rhode Island. He says, Friday's show you mentioned the offhand that Chipotle Mexican Grill was run by McDonald's. I went to their website to check that out, and I was surprised and wanted to confirm it. Turns out McDonald's was a major investor, but according to the clip from Nightline on their site, they cut ties in 2006. More importantly, though, they seem to be a very eco-friendly operation and use mostly non-factory animals with no antibiotics. I was impressed with what I discovered and will be going there more often. Not trying to be a smartass, just wanted to let you know. I appreciate that, Rick. You know, that's good news. And I will look with a distinctly different eye toward that outfit if ever I'm around one. And there just happens to be one up in Woodley Park in D.C. Near a hotel where we frequently stay. I've always walked past it because I deemed it was, you know, McDonald's brand burritos. But that changes things, and I really appreciate the information. And I appreciate the input all of you have brought to the program tonight. Hope you'll join us tomorrow night. No show Wednesday, but tomorrow's Tuesday, so that means there's a show. Join us tomorrow night, and we'll crank it up again. For those of you who are still blinking lights on the phone system, I apologize. Chime in, and we'll get it started again tomorrow. Thanks to everybody who makes the program go, from our chief engineer, webmaster, web designer, John Fox, to Ben Birch, who makes all the streams stream and everything behave over at whiterosesociety.org. To Lottie in the chat room, to our news ninjas, Gene and Susan, to our blogger, Texas Betsy, to Matt Osborne at osborneinc.com, our Southeast correspondent. Go and have a look at his Greek democracy post at Crooks and Liars and see what it looks like when blogs actually become dialogues between people. Because I think that really is what it should be. Thanks to my head writer, David, in Tennessee. And, of course, Reverbo is our op-ed columnist at headonradionetwork.com, the cavalcade of crazy. In addition to the contributions that you provide to keep the show going, we are also supported by Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net, and coalriverwind.org. They are, in fact, the hardest working, bravest people I know. See you tomorrow, y'all. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you.
go. Head On with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy!
Step right up, you will not believe your ears. It's Morin Monday on the horn. No one will be admitted after the first 5 minutes. Head inside the tent and you will be up to your armpits in Morins.
Oh, it is Morin Monday on the horn, and we've got some Jim Dandy nominees for the evening. Yes, we do. I'm trying to find out. Has Ferg been in here listening to metal or something? Now like my headphones are all fuzzy. Yeah. Or is that me? Is this what happens when you develop the Cuisinart Todorok command voice? I don't know. We'll find out. But it certainly is annoying. It's one of those things I didn't expect to be hearing. What in the... Where's the engineer? Does it get better if I turn it down? No, it still sounds fuzzy. No, I don't think it's me. No, it is Morin Monday on the horn, though. And would somebody shoot me a note in the chat room? Do I sound fuzzy coming through you? Sort of a... When I talk, I don't know. I got a weird return going on here. So just shoot me in. I'm watching the main chat room. Let me know. Yeah, okay. Sounds a little fuzzy. Thanks, Sparky. Better? No? All right. That's still weird. Stand by. Still weird? Yeah. Well, what in the world could this be?